The meeting will come to order, please. This is Charter School Night, everyone, and we will be hearing Senate File 55, to which Representative Woodard will be adding some amendments. And then after that, House File 672, a bill authored by Representative Bob Detmer. So, Representative Woodard, would you like to come to the table? We have a quorum. We don't have a quorum yet, Representative Woodard, so we can't officially place your Senate file on the table, but would you like to begin walking through, first of all, Senate File 55, explain what that is, and then I think we're going to be able to officially move. Hold off a second. We're going to be able to do it officially. We have a quorum. Representative Woodard, welcome to the committee. Would you move Senate File 55, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move Senate File number 55 and have it referred to the Civil Law Committee.
Representative Woodard moves Senate File number 55 to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. And Representative Woodard, I believe you have some amendments, starting with the DE-1-1 amendment. Would you move that, please?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have the DE-1-1 amendment. I would like to move that amendment to put Senate File 55 in the order in which I'd like to discuss it.
All those in favor of amending Senate File 55 with the DE-1-1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and Senate File 55 is amended with the delete all, the DE-1-1 amendment. Representative Woodard, do you have other amendments?
No, Madam Chair, this is just the DE-1 amendment. And Madam Chair, this is the charter school authorizer language that we've been talking about the last few weeks. In fact, it is, in the most part, is exactly the same as the Dabney amendment that we added to the omnibus bill on the House floor last week. There are a couple of changes as we've talked to the department and continue to talk to the charter schools about ways to improve the language. So there are some changes to the language that are different than the Dabney amendment that we have in the House omnibus bill. I would like to have a couple of testifiers come here in just a minute to talk first a little bit about the authorizer language from 2009 and then have some testimony on why these changes are important. Really, we're doing a couple of things. One is we are changing and cleaning up some of the language to make this clearer on our intent. And then secondarily, there's some improvements we're making as well to make authorizers a little bit more, hold them accountable to what we're asking them to do, and also some additional language from the department to make their life a little bit easier as well.
Representative Woodard, there are a couple of other amendments, and I'll move the 55A1 amendment to the delete everything amendment of Senate File number 55. All those in favor of accepting the
well, Madam Chair,
yes,
you're voting on it already. Could we hear about it?
Yes, I'm sorry about that. Yes. I don't think Representative Woodard even knows what it is.
Sorry, thank you, Kathy.
Yes, please, let's have some discussion on it, please.
Okay, thank you. And what the A1 amendment does is it on page 5, line 35, we reinstate in some stricken language. Where it's page 5, line 35, reinstate the or. And on page 5, line 36, we delete the new language, the or, there to clean that up. And then on page 6, line 1,
we are
deleting everything before the period, which is to strike the any good cause language there, so number 4.
Any discussion? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is, refresh my memory, I believe this is language from the governor, that you're striking, language from the governor's policy bill proposal.
Representative Woodard.
Yes, Representative Greiling, and thank you, Madam Chair. That is correct. That is language that the department would like to have in there.
All right.
Representative
well,
Greiling.
Members, I strongly oppose this amendment. We've had, before Representative Woodard was here, some problems with charter schools, and the commissioner hasn't had enough tools in the toolbox, and I'm thinking of the Blue Sky Charter Online Learning Charter School, particularly that Governor Pawlenty and Commissioner Segrin dragged on for over 2 years trying to deal with that school. And I myself was working on some legislation to try to address the problem of not having enough tools to deal with that school or any other potential schools coming up like that. And then I saw the governor's bill, and so I'm supportive of that. And now you're deleting this section. And while I think it is a phrase that could be discussed because it is pretty broad, I'm wondering what you're proposing then to deal with the gaps in our law that enables the commissioner to deal with charter schools on our behalf to make sure that we don't have things like the Blue Sky School that was graduating kids who didn't take the proper number of courses and other things that that when they happen, for instance, in the Minneapolis public schools last year, Minneapolis was quickly on a choker chain and quickly corrected things and so forth. But this dragged on for a long time with kids continuing to graduate, and they've had a lot of changes in administration, and hopefully they can get a handle on things with what some of the previous ones were doing. But if I'm just reading the news, it sounds like it's not resolved yet, even with the current administration there. So I'm wondering, I know that you're from some of the other things I've looked at here, and I've mixed up which bills are which for today, that you're kind of going down the path of taking the commissioner out of the equation and having the school board and the authorizers be the bottom line, or maybe I'm wrong about that. But this particular amendment here, what are you going to do then for the gaps in our law by taking this out?
Representative Woodard, let's have the department come to the table as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Would the department come here, please, to talk about the definition of any good cause? And Representative Woodard, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling, any good cause is a very, very open term, and I think that gives way too broad of a definition for the commissioner to be able to act upon. We still have the other three areas here, failing to demonstrate the criteria under paragraph C, violating a term of the chartering contract between the authorizer and the charter school board of directors, and unsatisfactory performance as an approved authorizer. I think that when we look at the Blue Sky example that you've given, there's a lot going on there. And I'm not sure that any good cause would have fixed some of the issues we're seeing in that particular area.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. However, there's not any new language. If you take that out, we have current law, and that's what's not doesn't appear to be working so well. So I'll, Madam Chair, wait to hear from the department then.
Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Education, and who's and I've got Dave Hartman with me, who works with our charter schools. I'm trying to catch up with what this amendment would amend on page 5, eliminate the term any good cause.
At the top of page 6, Ms. Hermanson.
And this was the language in our...
Correct.
Right. Madam Chair, I guess we would share the concern. We're trying to be consistent with our ability to deal with issues, and we would have concerns about we would like to have that included. I know you were talking about Blue Sky specifically. But at this point, I think it's broader than just that specific example.
Ms. Hermanson, how do you define any good cause?
Well, Madam Chair,
Ms. Hermanson.
I'm going to be a little careful here because I've had an awful lot of issues dumped on my desk within the last 2 weeks. And I don't want to get into too many specifics. I think there are issues out there that may or may not be covered by the criteria that are listed here. And things that include loans to charters that aren't approved, let's just say that there are things that are not covered by this, the language that we think would be very helpful in strengthening the ability to enhance accountability. And if we could be prescriptive, it would become hard to be prescriptive enough to deal with some of the issues and broad enough. We are trying to enhance charter schools to be high quality. And dealing with a whole variety of issues that that we may need to cover, I think there would be a very judicious use of that in our process. And quite frankly, I think we need the ability to be a little broader. And I guess I'm going to leave it at that because we've had several brought to us, both by parents, students, the press, and everybody. And I do think there's need for us to have a little broader authority and be able to use it in a way that does not negate our work with charters and in order to work with them to be the best that they can be. We are just going into this authorizer process, and being able to work with them to do their job and with us to do what we think is necessary to protect students, deal with appropriate use of taxpayers' dollars, et cetera. That's kind of the most I can see at this time without getting into too many specifics about specific issues that are being raised right now.
Thank you, Ms. Hermanson. And I remember when we had this conversation in my office, I asked if there was a definition of any good cause, because at the time I thought it was very broad, and I thought perhaps I would
and it's a good question,
be able to find out that, but we have not been able to determine that answer.
Madam Chair, if I might,
Representative Woodard.
I would suggest that we can continue to work on that language, you know, in consultation with the department and with the charter schools to try to get at where some of your issues are. I just think any good cause shown is so broad that it's not fair language for this bill.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree it's very broad, and it sounds to me like the department is not disagreeing, but I think we also could agree that we don't have enough language in our current law to deal with more than blue sky other situations that Ms. Hermanson has talked about. And I'm wondering, I would not feel comfortable at all just deleting this and working our way through, as we seem to be doing in a kind of a sloppy manner, fixing it later after it's left this committee. This is the committee that should be nailing this down, and I would hope all of us, I'm guessing all of us, and including the charter school people, would want us to have good laws, just like we want good laws for teacher evaluation, and we don't want, the teaching profession does not want any more than anyone else does, teachers that are teaching that are not up to the standard that we think we should have for the kids, ditto then for the charter schools. And I'd like to ask Ms. Larson or Mr. Hartman, if we have any suggestions right now, and if we could lay this amendment aside and work on this rather than just delete this language and
Madam Chair,
about what it might replace.
Ms. Hermanson.
If I might, if you look on page 20 of the amendment, what we're doing is really running parallel to what the, giving the commissioner's oversight, running it parallel to what the authorizer's oversight is on line 20.3. And so it also brings in some consistency as well.
Madam Chair, could I ask Ms. Larson to...
Representative Greiling, go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, Ms. Larson, I always look to you when you hear the discussion to come up with something that capsulizes what we're talking about, and I wondered if you've had a chance to do that yet.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, I don't have a specific recommendation. What I would observe is exactly what Mr. Hartman has said, is that there is a parallel construction between the new language proposed on 6.1 and what you've got at the top of page 20 on line 3. However, it's important to note that the language that's being proposed for deletion on page 6 goes to the commissioner. I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
The language that appears on page 20 goes to terminating or not renewing a charter school contract. So the distinction is the actor in this case, and whether that's relevant or not is something that policymakers would have to decide.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm a firm believer that it should be the commissioner. The commissioner is the person who we look to be the bottom line for the regular public schools, and I don't think we should be privatizing the charter schools to the point where we have an authorizer who isn't accountable to the commissioner for appeal and oversight to be in charge of charter schools. I've always been a charter school supporter, and that's because I see them as public schools, not private schools. And if we're going to treat them differently when it comes time for whether they're being accountable, doing a good job, and we're going to privatize that, I think that's taking us down a road where I could no longer support charter schools. And I've been one of the strong supporters.
So, Representative Greiling, does the commissioner have good cause to close a regular public school? Representative Greiling?
Madam Chair, I cited in my earlier comment what happened in the Minneapolis public schools, where they were also graduating some students who hadn't had the proper requirements in one of their alternative schools, contract alternative school. And they were, it didn't drag on for 2 years to clean up that. They had to fix it, and they had to fix it right away, and they did. And they were working with the commissioner.
Yes, and Representative Greiling, the language in 527 says, if the commissioner terminates a contract, the commissioner shall assist the charter school in acquiring a new authorizer. So I think the suggestion there is that there's corrective action that occurs. In fact, it's alluded to earlier in the language. My concern here is that we're giving the commissioner very broad authority in one kind of public school when I have no indication that that kind of authority is allowable for the regular public school. There's where I would raise a question. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, again, I'll go back to, I'm willing to continue the conversation. I don't think we're going to come up with language that's going to fix what the commissioner's concerns are or my concerns on any good cause shown. I would recommend that this amendment is passed by the committee and entered into this bill. Like I said, I am willing to continue the conversations with the commissioner and her staff to find better language. But certainly any good cause, I agree with you, any good cause is too broad. And that's why we want to strike it out of this language.
And Representative Woodard, this is going to civil law. I think that would be an excellent place, even though we're the policy committee. A phrase like any good cause is a legal phrase, I think. And maybe that would be a very good place for that discussion to occur. Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, I strongly disagree. And this is, it's talking not about the charter school, but the authorizer. It's the commissioner may at any time take correct action against an authorizer. And if the commissioner may not do that, then the authorizer has got an awful lot of power. And the authorizer's not the chain of command that we have for the regular public schools. And I don't think this is an issue at all for the Civil Law Committee. I think this is fairly important, an issue for this committee and keeping of our charter schools being public schools where they have broad-based support. And it sounds like as we continue to do this session, we're just going to push it along, have a party line vote, and so therefore let's have one. I will ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call's been requested. Representative Woodard, anything else? Anyone else you want to bring to the table to explain that phrase?
Madam Chair.
Representative Kapp.
Yeah, I guess I do rise to say that I would hope members would vote this amendment down, that at this point in time, something that I think we've consistently looked at is that in statute, if we see a continuation of a phrase or of, in this situation, of good cause, I think that that is reflective of making sure that we have consistency within it. Beyond that is the fact that it is the authorizer, and I think that's critical to see. This is not about the charter school itself. It's about the authorizer. And third, members, I really think that we have to tread lightly on the fact that there can be an informal hearing that can be placed with the commissioner before any of this corrective action has taken place, and I think that's important to recognize. That there are measures here. There are stopgap measures in case that something is proposed here, that something can be brought forward. So I would actually like to say we should not adopt this amendment. And members, let's look at then language that may be better in both instances rather than just having good cause. And so I would say that let's keep it the way it is. And if we want to work on this later on, we can to change it.
So thank you, Representative Kapp. So Ms. Hermanson, without saying anything that you can't say because of the situations that you're facing at the department, is it the authorizer who is usually the one who's jeopardizing the charter school operation, or is it something else? If you can, feel free to answer that.
Well, Madam Chair, we are just kind of getting into this whole authorizer process, and quite frankly, I think it's a little early for us to comment on them, because we are trying to develop high-quality authorizers, and in approving them, we are not approving authorizers that we, do not think would do a good job. But having said that, the issues right now are really in the oversight by sponsors or authorizers with schools. One of the things I think we do need to keep in mind is we give charter schools greater autonomy, and therefore I think we hold them a little bit to a higher standard of accountability, where in the case of a local school district, the accountability lies with the voters, and they have the right to make choices about who they put back on board. So, I think parallel construction, having the same standards, is kind of where we were coming from. We want to be able to deal fairly with problems. But we also want to make sure that our authorizers are doing their job, and that down the road we have a whole set of good authorizers and we don't have some of the issues.
So, Representative Woodard, I'm going to move to withdraw this amendment so that you can have better discussions than having this either pass or fail and then we don't know where it's going to go. I think you need to continue to have those discussions. So I'll withdraw the 55A1 amendment. I think you have some technical changes as well that you wanted to make.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We do have a couple of technical changes that if Ms. Larson could help us with, I would appreciate.
Ms. Larson, this is in the DE, the delete everything amendment. Would you call our attention to those?
Madam Chair, Representative Woodard, I know we chatted on the phone, and I remember what they are. I just can't remember the page.
Okay.
There was a word contact that should have been contract, but to clarify what was intended rather than contract, it ought to say employment agreement. And elsewhere, we
want... Ms. Larson, page 7.
7.28.
Yes, 7.28.
7.28.
The use of the word contract...
Yeah. Madam Chair, members, on 7.28, you'll see that the word contact is stricken. That was simply an effort to clean up the opportunity presented itself. So this was an effort to clean up the language. But, in fact, as long as we're cleaning it up, it would be more precise to say employment agreement, since that is the context in which this paragraph, or the context in which this paragraph is directed.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. We'll incorporate that technical change, and then there was one other.
And the second one, Madam Chair, was 18.14. And that was the word sustainable.
Yeah. Yes, Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Woodard, members, if you notice on 18.5, the word sustainable is stricken, and to be consistent with the overall intent, the word sustainable on 18.14 should have been stricken, too.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, and Representative Woodard will incorporate those technical changes. I have the RA11096 amendment. Was that yours also, Representative Woodard, on the reporting?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is as well.
So, Representative Woodard, I'll move that amendment. Will you please explain the RA11-096 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the intent of this additional language is to allow the commissioner to disseminate to the charter school authorizers a more comprehensive report containing testing information at a student level data that makes it anonymous data that meets the authorizer's needs in fulfilling its obligations. And this is, again, an effort for the authorizer to better understand the performance of the charter schools that they're authorizing, and then to give the commissioner the ability to disseminate that information to them so they can make that proper determination.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all Representative Greiling?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondered, since this is the first I've seen of this, if there's anybody in the audience that opposes it, because it seems... Okay, could I hear from Mr. Piccolo?
Yeah, Mr. Piccolo, please come forward. Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Our concern with this amendment is that we have a number of small schools that even if you anonymize it, students still can be identified, because we have some schools that are very small and there's maybe only 5 or 6 kids in a particular class that are tested. And if you have a couple of those that are special ed kids, they can all be identified. So we would, we believe that if you're going to do this, there should be a number that has to be met in terms of, so that very small schools, kids cannot be identified when.
I think we need the department down here again to comment on this.
Why are they way back there?
I know.
It serves a night.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. welcome back to the committee. It sounds like the new language suggests that there's not a comprehensive enough report, but we've heard Mr. Piccolo note that some schools are so small that the identity of the student might not be protected. Ms. Hermanson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson with the department. We would try to comply with this amendment in a way that would not... if there was a cell size that was too small, we would probably try to address that in those instances so that the information could not become student specific. Now, so in essence, I think there's ways of doing this, but there will be instances where we may not be able to supply the information because of data privacy. However, I think there is some value in working with the authorizers to have them have appropriate information as they regarding
the accountability of testing. Correct.
So we would, just so you understand, that if we get to that number, that's not going to be workable. That how we deal with that information may get to be somewhat limited, especially in very small cell size numbers.
Representative Dabney, did you have a question to that point?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, to the amendment. And I think the first question is for Representative Woodard. Since I didn't run over and grab the statute books, what are the authorizer's expectations or obligations under 124D.10? Can you help me with that?
I think we'll call in Ms.
Larson. I can
Larson.
Help someone who can help with that.
Phone a friend?
Ms. Larson, 124D.10.
Madam Chair, there are requirements. Actually, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I was looking at the student performance level data. Madam Chair, there is language in the charter school law on pupil performance. It requires, and it's a little bit cursory, in my opinion, a charter school must design its programs to at least meet the outcomes adopted by the Commissioner for Public School Students. In the absence of the commissioner's requirement, the school must meet the outcomes contained in the contract with the authorizer. The achievement levels of the outcomes contained in the contract may exceed the achievement levels of any outcomes adopted by the commissioner. So either it would be outcomes adopted by the commissioner for public schools, which would be MCAs and grad, or those contained in the contract, or both.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. I think the question that I'm circling around is who should, if we're going to provide this level of detail on student performance, the first question maybe is for Ms. Hermanson. Does the department provide traditional school districts with the same level of data and data analysis? Maybe I'll start there.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney.
Ms. Hermanson.
We do. I mean, that's part of the reports back on their testing, and we have a minimum cell size number when we put the information together. And if Dirk were here, he could explain it more in testing ease, which I can't. In the case, you know, as I look at how we might deal with this, if the cell sizes are big enough, we'd be providing to the authorizer, and a lot of that's public information when you go on the website and see how a school is doing. I think the issue here is when you get a smaller cell size, what we've had to do in some instances is develop a data privacy agreement with the authorizer if we want to share it. So there are ways we could even get to the smaller cell size, but our concern here is the data privacy of students at a point when we get into a small group that falls below our cell size.
Senator Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I certainly share that concern, and I recognize that. I think what I'm trying to get at is if this is simply providing charter school authorizers with the same level of data that you provide school boards, that's not a problem. If this is about a charter school complying with its contract with the authorizer, I'm not clear why the Department of Education would carry the costs of contract compliance rather than that contract compliance existing within that relationship. And why are we socializing the costs of people complying with a contract that they've joined in with?
Madam Chair, what we're trying to encourage authorizers to do is follow through on their contract mm-hmm. with their schools, mm-hmm. and obviously the most important one of those is student achievement. I mean, that's what they're mm-hmm. in business mm-hmm. for, and so I think it's only fair to work with them on that, to give them the information they need to know to tell us how those kids are doing, and obviously one of the key ones is really the testing information that we gather at the state level.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. I think you've spurred Ms. Larson to suggest some more explicit language here instead of the student-level data, which is misleading. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. There is a tension in all of this, as Representative Dabney has pointed out. In the charter school contract, or under the subdivision governing the charter school contract, there is a requirement that the contract contain criteria, processes, and procedures that the authorizer will use for oversight of academic performance. So the question then becomes, whose data for what purpose? I think one of the ambiguities or the lack of clarity here is what you mean by student-level data. Is that literally an individual student, or is that at the student level but meant to be summary data based on cell size? And I think that could be construed either way. So if the intent is that it be cell size and no fewer, then what we would have based on cell size is summary data. That's what you get if the cell size meets the established number to protect the information of individual students. So maybe it ought to say on 1.15 that contains summary data on student performance outcomes that meets the authorizer's needs.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
We're moving kind of fast here, but if I'm understanding Ms. Larson, it would be an amendment that on line 1.15 okay. after the only? I'll let you do it.
Ms. Larson, tell us where you're inserting.
All right. Madam Chair, perhaps the easiest way, if on the document RA 11-096, page 1, line 15, delete only anonymized student-level data and insert summary data on student performance outcomes.
Discussion to that suggestion, Representative Woodard.
Madam Chair, I think that that is a good suggestion. I think that does get at what we're trying to get at here. There may be some people in the from the public that might like to testify on that as well.
Mr. Sweeney, anyone who would like to comment on that? Mr. Piccolo. Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, Eugene Piccolo. And members, I think the proposed language sounds like it does what addresses our concern, that individual students are not be able to be identified. And so if the summary data is at least the cell size that is reported and can be reported publicly, then we're okay with that.
Very good. Other discussion from members? Then let's incorporate that change into this amendment. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor of the RA 11096 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted as amended. Okay, Representative Woodard, I think now your bill is in the shape in which you want it. Would you please continue your description of it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to have David Hansen from the National Association of Charter School Authorizers testify, if that's okay with you.
Yes, please come to the table and welcome. Please say your name for the record.
Madam Chair, just a little confusion over here. Was there one amendment yet to go, 097?
No, that amendment is not being offered.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry about that, members. That amendment that had a change, let's see, mitigate to resolve, that's not being offered. Mitigate was a better verb, and I believe the department had preferred mitigate, as I recall. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members. My name is David Hansen, and I'm Vice President for Policy and Advocacy at the National Association of Charter School Authorizers, or you can call us NACSA for short. Thank you for the chance to talk today about the charter authorizer legislation before you. First, about NACSA, we're a nonprofit organization headquartered in Chicago. We're dedicated to growing high-quality educational opportunities for children by strengthening the performance of charter school authorizers. We carry out this work through professional development of authorizer offices and staffs around the country. We've been most recently engaged by the Detroit Public Schools to help them with the education reform efforts that they need to carry out because of the budget pressures that that city is in, for example. We also help authorizing through giving financial support for the improvement and innovation in authorizing. There's a number of grantees here in Minnesota, including your own Department of Education. And through public education aimed at improving the policy environment for authorizing at the state and federal levels. It's only been recognized in the past few years that charter authorizing is an essential component of a sound charter school sector. Authorizing, sponsorship as you called it here in Minnesota for many years, was an afterthought in most laws establishing state charter systems back in the 90s. But eventually it was seen in the dynamics of school creation, in the dynamics of ongoing autonomy and oversight, and not the least, the dynamics of school closure. It was seen that there was a need for a system of guardrails for the charter sector. But charter authorizing done right is more than just a system of guardrails to protect against disaster. Our experience in working with charter sectors across the country is this. If you want to have charters that are of high quality, autonomous, and innovative in the broadest senses, and growing vigorously to meet the tremendous reform needs of traditional public education, if you want these kinds of charters, you must have a certain kind of charter authorizing environment, a high quality authorizing environment, in order to get them. The high quality authorizing environment is held accountable for carrying out with excellence three duties: setting high standards for charters, protecting the autonomy charters need to succeed, and representing the interests of children and the public invested in the charter sector. Not surprisingly, Minnesota was the first state to come to the same conclusion when you enacted legislation in 2009. Your 2009 legislation, the subject of the bills on your agenda today, this law established a new framework for charter school authorizing. In NACS's judgment, this law will lead to more children having more access to high-quality charter schooling than what the state offers today. The 2009 Act sets Minnesota on track to regain its preeminence as a model for the rest of the country in attaining charter school quality to scale. The 2009 legislation built a framework around comprehensive, detailed standards that spell out the best practices learned here in Minnesota and elsewhere for high-quality authorizing. These comments that I have about the legislation on your agenda today to amend Minnesota Statute 124D come from the perspective of NACS's mission to be an impartial arbiter and promoter of charter education quality. To be sure, NACSA has had some role in the development of the 2009 law and its implementation. It was our answering of a phone call from the legislative auditor in 2008 that contributed to the development of a report of theirs and eventually to the 2009 law. We've also advised the Minnesota Department of Ed on the authorizer application process envisioned by the 2009 law. The standards written into your law reflect our own recommended principles and standards for high-quality authorizing. I hope, Madam Chair, that this was made available for members.
Yes.
Please take a look at it. It's 25 pages, and it is what your statutes point to as a source for many of the issues that have come up. Madam Chair, Representative, about the language that was brought about in terms of having a for any good cause kind of language. If there's any good cause left over from this, okay, but I really hope that you take a good look at this, and because it's already part of your statutes, and we think it covers a lot of the things that you're facing right now as you transition from the old sponsorship regime to the new authorizer regime. So these standards written into your law reflect our own principles and standards. You know, there should be no surprise, as it's the same Minnesota charter school experience that went into drafting the 2009 legislation that has long been engaged by NACSA in developing principles and standards. That is, our standards are your standards and vice versa because of the interaction between some of the leaders you have in this state and also with NACSA. So because of their comprehensiveness and detail, we have found these standards to provide the objective guidance required to raise the quality of authorizing in a state. The 2009 law says that an authorizer needs to address the following criteria in order to receive the authority to authorize from the department and then carry out this authority. They are: the agency has to have the capacity and infrastructure to carry out the work. The agency has to come up and talk about and get approved in terms of the quality of the charter application and its approval process. The approval process is really important. You have to be sure that there's proper barriers to entry, that the people who are getting the charters and the five-year contracts and the chance to show what they can do, they have to be able to show that they have some level of capacity and ability to do a charter school well. It also talks about the authorizer has to show what they mean and what they think about in terms of the performance contract. The performance contract is also part of some of the things that have come up in the discussions already. But the performance contract is the unique document that provides the autonomy, but also the individual accountability between an authorizer and a charter school that allows charter schools to have the autonomy, but also the innovation, the ability to try new things, but still be held accountable. And how the authorizer treats that performance contract process is very important. And it's important, as you have it in law now, for it to be part of the application process and approval process of an authorizer. Also in your standards are how the authorizer would go on carrying on ongoing oversight and evaluation of the charters it sees and the key steps in charter renewal. These are all issues that you are talking about because of what you see in the media about charter schools and charter education. They would, once you get this system in, address most, if not all, of what is of concern and has been of concern to the legislature over the past years. The standards you have in place through your 2009 law are, in our experience, the ideal guide for the development of charter authorizers at all stages and levels of experience. Having standards such as these sets the same expectations for every authorizer. Not the expectation to do the same work or approve the same kinds of schools and so on, but to achieve the same outcome of high-performing charter schooling. Following Minnesota's lead, other states are embedding detailed statutes, standards into their statutes. These include New Mexico, which has just been passed and signed into law, and an act of legislation in New Jersey, Wisconsin, and Montana, just to name some other states that are looking at this, following, again, Minnesota's lead, which is the statute that you passed in 2009 has been passed around to many states that are trying to expand charters and also to catch up with the authorizing regime that you've developed. NACSA recognized the law as the country's top policy innovation for 2009 and particularly awarded the work of Representative Linda Slocum, Senator Kathy Saltzman, and VOA's Volunteer of America's Katie Peel in the development of the legislation. The 2009 law deserves a chance to work before major changes are made to it, including some of the changes proposed in the different legislation before this committee. Madam Chair and members, I've had trouble keeping up with the pace of legislation here in Minnesota, so I can't necessarily comment on all the things that are in the amended bill. But I want to say that at least one thing that we are looking at and would think is a proper step for you to follow is to extend the deadline for the authorizer application approval process, but only for 12 months to the end of June of 2012. One of the consequences always intended for this law is that authorizer applicants unwilling or unable to meet high standards would be shut down or rejected. Another of the consequences always intended for this law is that poor schools, poor charter schools, would be shut down by it or not gain approval. Poor schools need to be closed down so that the resources they hold of students seeking charter education, of teachers, of facilities, or of tax dollars, these resources need to be released for others to try and do better as charter educators. Think of it as a dynamic of educational creative destruction. Close poor schools so that others can get a chance to do better. Market forces were once thought to be able to hold poor charters accountable by shutting them down through a lack of students. The fact is, this dynamic has not developed, neither in Minnesota nor elsewhere in the country. Delays in the closing of poor authorizers and poor schools beyond what's proposed in Senate File 55, delays in these intended consequences of the 2009 law being realized, these are simply kicking down the road the day when Minnesota will achieve the kind of high-quality public charter education system this state can be proud of. So NACSA supports a one-year extension, but we recommend that the department be statutorily directed to close the application period for the final round of authorizer approval by August 3rd, and that by February 2012, schools need to have either been approved by an accepted authorizer or else they need to notify their families that they will be closing down at the end of the school year. The charter school movement is about autonomy extended against the collateral of accountability. The responsible thing to do is for authorizers in schools and the department to be held accountable to clear directions and clear deadlines set by the legislature for transitioning to a new charter sector design. NACSA stands ready to assist the department to fulfill its duties if it remains committed to the vision of the 2009 law, which I believe it does. We can help with the training of approved authorizers. We can help them to take up the slack in authorizer capacity so that deserving schools losing their authorizers find a new home. And we can also help to make sure that there's adequate capacity to take on entirely new schools. So there's other changes. Perhaps they've been addressed by some of the amendments that have been flying around. But I want to say that it's actually very gratifying that, and perhaps not surprising for Minnesota that you're taking so much time on this particular issue. It's very seldom that we come to a state and where anybody really wants to spend much time talking about authorizing. But you really learn the most important issue and the most important point, which is you have to have a certain kind of authorizing to have the kind of charter schools I think you want in this state. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Are there questions for Mr. Hansen?
Sure.
Representative Dabney.
Question actually not for Mr. Hansen. I find you refreshing, and thank you for that. But for Representative Woodard, Mr. Hansen laid out a timeline for the extension of the charter authorizer deadline. And as you know, I'm a supporter of that. I offered the amendment on the House floor when the majority was dragging their feet on that to get us there. Does the timeline that Mr. Hansen identified, which would be a courageous timeline, as I think he identified, can I find that in your bill, and if so, where, Representative Woodard?
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe the language, the exact date that Mr. Hansen was talking about was, what date did you have?
August 3rd for the closing of the application period, and then February 2012 for the notification of school closure.
Okay, so, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I find you refreshing as well. I assume that wasn't a slight. But what you would see on 5.12...
You'd be the first, Representative Woodard, but thank you.
Oh, I always enjoy it. 5.12, we're close, and we say September 30th.
Madam Chair and Representative, I appreciate the opportunity the representative here has given me. We didn't coordinate on testimony, and he simply invited me to come up here and just pontificate. So I appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering about the
February 2012, yeah.
Yeah. Deadline for notifying the parents, the students and the parents, because they need to know as soon as possible within reasonable constraints for the department and the authorizers and the charter schools to all work together. If I had a kid in a charter school, I'd want to know by February that we need to make other choices. And I'm wondering if that is in here somewhere, and if it's not, if we need to get it in there somewhere. Maybe the department has a viewpoint on this to assure families that they're getting timely notification so they can make other choices, find another charter school, traditional, public, private, homeschool, whatever their choice may be.
I think we need the department at the table again.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Woodard.
Ms. Larson may be able to help us with that date because I know it's in here, but I tend to.
Ms. Larson.
Last section, last page.
Yes, there we are.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, Madam Chair?
It's on the last page of the bill, 24.
Okay.
And beginning in paragraph B, line 24.3, in that paragraph are the dates except for the February date. We have June 30.
Madam Chair?
Representative Dabney.
When I had reviewed this legislation previously to tonight, I picked up on that June 30th date being after the end of the school year, traditionally, and that had caused me questions. So I guess the question for Representative Woodard is, do we look at some language that notifies, that pulls this back from June 30th to February 30th? Oh, come on, folks, give it up, come on. and some language that assures notification of the parents.
I think, Ms. Hermanson, we need you at the table.
Yeah. And Madam Chair, just as
Representative Woodard,
they approach the table here. And I think there's several members of the public that might have an opinion on that as well. So maybe we can hear from them as well.
Ms. Hermanson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to have Mr. Hartman address this because we did have some language and we were trying to step back. We agree with the extension for the schools to get an authorizer. Our concern also was how soon should we let parents and students know if they've been able to achieve that outcome. And Mr. Hartman was involved in helping draft the language, so I'd like him to answer kind of what we saw the timeline should be.
Mr. Hartman, please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. David Hartman from the Minnesota Department of Education. I'm the acting supervisor of the Charter School Center. Thank you. So as Assistant Commissioner Hermanson mentioned, our intent is to have families and students know as soon as possible if there's going to be a negative outcome to these changes so that they can have time to make decisions about changing schools. So this particular school year, in fact, right now we're in the midst of two parallel processes going on at the same time. So the authorizer approval process that the department is managing is going on right now, and change of authorizer requests are being faced by authorizers who in turn are putting those forth to the department as well. They sometimes fall into competition and end up with 11th hour decisions just because they're running parallel. The field has expressed concern about this, and so with this extension, we would sequence those processes. So an early August deadline for the authorizer approval process would be the only one that we would run in the school year. It would authorizer approval processes typically take around 3 months to complete. So you would assume that it would be August, September, October, so by the end of October. And then all schools would know whether or not their authorizer is effectively approved by the commissioner. And if they were not approved and they needed an approved authorizer, it would give them November, December, January to apply to an approved authorizer. And that authorizer, in turn, could make a determination on that application and put forth a change of authorizer request to the department, who in turn needs to review that request to see if the authorizer has fulfilled their obligations in the process and make determinations likely by the end of March at the very latest, giving families April, May, and June to make determinations for the forthcoming school year.
Thank you, Mr. Hartman. Representative Dabney, follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question is, does the language in front of us reflect that timeline and give students and families the assurance of timely notification? And frankly, when I think of school closures, as we've experienced in my district, kind of the opportunity to grieve and end the school, not just the school year, but the school in a fashion that allows them to move forward. Does the language in the bill allow for the process the gentleman just laid out?
Mr. Hartman.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, the current language in the bill identifies September 28th, which pushes 2 months back the authorizer approval process, which in turn would end that process at the end of December. And it does not have a deadline for the change of authorizer that we've recommended, which is February 1st. And so the existing language in the charter law is ambiguous, and it allows charter schools and authorizers actually, to put forth those change of authorizer requests up through May and June, which none of them want to do, but we don't want to do either. But we don't want anyone put in a position where they would put in 11th hour requests and have those families in limbo. So this would be a one-time deal where, because of the new unique characteristics of these changes coming out of the 2009 changes, where we would sequence all of this, we would take a proactive role to communicate these changes to the charter school community, work with Minnesota Association of Charter Schools to make sure that all charter schools are aware of these deadlines. But this way, then, the field is well aware of these deadlines.
I think Mr. Piccolo wants to say something. So will you come to the table, please, in regard to this timeline?
Madam Chair and members, we support the September date for the authorizers to apply. One of the reasons we support that is we've heard from authorizers who have not yet applied that they would like the summertime. In fact, some of them are school districts who have said, this is the time of year we can actually do this kind of work and be able to get this done. We've had a couple school districts where they've just not had time to do it during the regular school year. And so that's why we would support it being after the end of the close of summer. I mean, if it's September 15th or even the day after Labor Day, we'd be open to that, support that. In terms of a deadline for authorizer transfer of schools to authorizers, we would be supportive of a particular date as long as, and this is a problem we've had this year, the department has ruled that a school cannot submit a transfer request as long as their current authorizer is applying for continuation. And so that has created some of the crunch we're in. So if schools cannot go forward with seeking a new authorizer because their authorizer may not be approved, until the very end, we've got another situation we have this year with the crunch. And so it needs to be either a later date for the transfer requests, so there's plenty of time, because you cannot just find a authorizer within 30 or 60 days. It takes a long time because they have a process. They have to come and do a visit. They do require certain documentation and so forth. And most authorizers are taking a good time to do this like they should.
Representative Woodard.
Madam Chair, I think there may be a couple more testifiers that would like to testify. And I believe Emily Luce is on the from TESA is on the.
Are there other testifiers who would like to present testimony? Please come to the table. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Emily Luce, and I'm a second grade teacher and current board member at TARC IMSEAD Academy. I've been working at the school for the past 4 years and have been serving on the board for the past three. And I'm basically here before you to request that the proposed bill to extend the time for charter schools to find a new authorizer be amended to include TESA Academy. The current proposal is not in favor of TESA because of the note that is in the session law, but not in the statute. It states an exception in Subdivision 3, Paragraph B, Clause 2, Item 4, stating that authorizers must be incorporated in Minnesota, which is only applicable to one sponsor, Islamic Relief, and Islamic Relief is our current sponsor. They're sponsoring the school, in which I love, I am passionate about. I want it to be open. Item 4 in session law is affecting my sponsor, my school, and the lives of many of the children and the families. And the current deadline is causing uncertainty to the parents, the students, and the staff. We've already lost staff. We've had panic among families to find a new school for their children that will support and accept their cultural differences. And the students are scared and wondering if they're going to have to move to a new school. A large percentage of students TESA serves are at risk due to high poverty, learning English, and their cultural differences. And it's critical for Minnesota that these students overcome the challenges and positively integrate into life in Minnesota. At TESA, the students are thriving both academically and socially. They've achieved the highest growth in the entire nation on their nationally normed NWEA testing, and have achieved as one of the top schools in MCA testing as well. We've demonstrated reading and math strategies to visiting teachers from across the state as part of community service, and our children are happy and healthy and learning. Without changing the deadline for TESA to find a new authorizer, the students are at risk of having the academic support taken right out from under them. So I feel that this is not in the best interest of the children or of Minnesota, and I ask that we please amend the bill so that all charter schools seeking new authorizers have another year, including TESA. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Luce. Yeah. Are there any questions for the testifier? Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there may be one more testifier.
Ms. Anderson. Thank you, Ms. Luce. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, guten Abend. My name is Gina Anderson. I'm the Executive Director of the Germanic American Institute, located just up the hill on Summit Avenue. We are the authorizer of the Twin Cities German Immersion School. It's a charter school we helped to found in 2004. TCGIS currently operates grades K through 6, and in the past 7 years has proven to be one of the highest performing charter schools, not just in St. Paul, but in the state of Minnesota. Despite the tremendous success of the school and the fact that the GAI has proven to be a highly capable and committed authorizer, we were recently informed by MDE that we're no longer considered an eligible authorizer. And this is due to the state's requirement of a $2 million net fund balance. And I can tell you that as a smaller to mid-sized nonprofit, a $2 million Attorney General filing is quite a challenge to overcome. We at the GAI understand and we completely support the reform of the authorizer application process and the need for more oversight. However, we also believe that MDE's new highly rigorous screening process and application process to be an authorizer better ensures that an organization has the capacity to meet its authorizer obligations rather than an arbitrary net fund balance requirement. I'd like to just share with you very briefly about the Germanic American Institute and our role as authorizer of the Twin Cities German Immersion School. We are a nonprofit organization whose mission is wholly focused on language and cultural education outreach. Can you imagine an authorizer that would have a better mission match for a German immersion language and culture school? Oversight at the school is provided by an authorizer council. This is about five professionals whose expertise is in language education, specifically German language education, finance, and governance. And all of the members of the authorizer council are fluent in German. And furthermore, they provide their services to the school free, which allows the school to save its authorizer fee and reinvest it back into the operating budget of the school. The partnership that the Germanic American Institute and the German Immersion School have built with TCGIS over the past 7 years has contributed greatly to the success of the school. We're able to offer them free use of our facility on Summit Avenue, our house, our grounds. Our staff and our members of our community volunteer regularly at the school. It's just been a wonderful working relationship and partnership. And we were devastated to learn that we're now considered no longer eligible to be an authorizer of the school. We think we're the perfect example that an organization can have the capacity, the mission match, and the dedication to be an authorizer without having an attorney general filing of $2 million. We care deeply about the school and about each of its students, and we would just ask the committee to support the striking of the $2 million net fund balance as specified in File 1321, and we'd also encourage the support of the extension of the one-year deadline.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders. Are there any questions for the testifier? Representative Woodard.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I believe, unless there's any other members of
the board. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify with concerns or to support the Mr. Piccolo, Senate File 55 as amended?
Madam Chair and members, just would like to address a couple things. We support many of the provisions and in here to clarify the law. We believe that we've learned some things in the last 18 months since 2009 major overhaul of the law, and that we are trying to really put more responsibility on the authorizers, as was the intent of the law, and clarify some of those things. We do have concern about a couple provisions. One is on page 11, or lines 10 through 12. This is a provision that would say that the charter school would indemnify and hold harmless the commissioner, authorizer, their officers, agents, employees from any suit, claim, or liability arising from the contract or operation of the school. Basically, the way this reads is if the commissioner or the authorizer does something inappropriate or illegal, the charter school holds them harmless and has no recourse, and then has to indemnify them. There already is a provision in the law, charter school law, that holds the authorizer harmless for anything the school does in terms of operations. In fact, it is in the statute provision, let's see. There is an immunity from holding the authorizer responsible for anything the school does, but to then say they cannot seek any remedy if the authorizer does something or the commissioner does something, we think is inappropriate. We hear about personal responsibility, and we're going, where's the personal responsibility for the person that does the inaction?
Mr. Piccolo, could you cite that number?
I had it, and now I can't find it.
Page 25? No, it's not 25. It's not 25. It's 21. It's 21, I believe.
Page, section 25 mm-hmm. of the law. The commissioner and authorizer member of the board of an authorizer in their official capacity employees of that are immune from civil and criminal liability with respect to all activities related to the charter school they approve and authorize.
And then there's new language, Mr. Piccolo, yeah. at the top of the next page.
Well, I'm quoting current law, Madam
Correct.
Chair.
So we'll have the department comment on that just okay. in just a moment. If okay. you would continue, please.
And that is also on page 23 in this bill. So it's repeated twice in this bill. But current law is subdivision 25 of current law.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. We do also have a concern on page 12, 12.6 through 8. It says an entity as a precondition of providing financial services to a charter school must agree to make available information about the charter school's financial audit to the commissioner upon request. First, financial services is, by legal definition in Minnesota statute, covers insurance, banking, stockbrokers, and so forth. And if this is about the audit, then we recommend it, say, the auditor rather than all financial services. But we also raise a bigger question. The commissioner already has authority to penalize the school if they don't provide the information that is requested. They can withhold aid under Minnesota Statute 127.42 and 127.43, which they can do to all public schools. So we're not exactly sure what problem they're trying to solve by that. And then on page 20, we do have some concerns about the language on lines 2024 through 2023. It changes the language significantly. We have no problem with people being accountable. It's just the use of the word committed. Is that mean that they've been found guilty, or is just that they've been accused of? Because you can be accused of committing something, or you can be convicted of doing something wrong. And oftentimes what we have seen is, and we have a situation right now where a charter school is accused of committing something because a parent who wanted a contract with the school and didn't get it has filed a grievance against the school with the department. And so it's an accusation, but it's not anything. So we have concern about the use of the word committed and would ask for some clarification of that.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. Representative Greiley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Piccolo, don't you think that multiple takes care of that?
No, because it could be multiple accusations of things or actual being found guilty of doing something wrong. And that's what the question is. Is committed mean accusation, or does it mean actually been found guilty of something?
Representative Greiley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would then ask Ms. Larson to clarify that. I think we mean.
And we'll have the department up here in a moment, too. Ms. Larson. We'll give her a minute. Representative Peterson, you had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Eugene, I'm somewhat concerned with the combination that we have here. Representative Woodard brought an amendment earlier that would have eliminated the vagary of the any good cause provision that the commissioner would be able to use to get rid of or terminate the school's ability to operate. And then we turn around and add an amendment in here that Eugene just cited that says that we're going to hold harmless the commissioner on any decisions or suits or liabilities that would arise. And it seems to me like a fairly dangerous combination where we provide no specificity in the law as to what are the grounds that a school could be terminated by the commissioner, and then we say we're going to hold the commissioner harmless. I don't think that's a good path to go down. I think, and I guess I would ask Eugene, and I know you don't like this provision, but if we were to move ahead with the previous amendment to get rid of that real vague language and almost unilateral authority to the commissioner is really what it amounts to, if we were to add that in, or to, excuse me, to eliminate that any good cause provision, would that make you more comfortable with the hold harmless provision that's included here?
Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, I think the issue, you raised the issue, and this was a big issue 2 years ago when we redid the bill, the law, about good cause, any good cause, and there was a lot of discussion about that. And we had concerns at the time, but we agreed to the language to get the bill through on that provision. I do think the two things together do cause us even more concern. We would prefer that some kind of definition of good cause be there, more specific, because it is any good cause, it becomes a judgment, a personal judgment rather than an objective criteria. And so combining the two does make it more lethal, if you want to refer it that way. So I think in terms of if to hold them harmless, if that means that you cannot file any kind of complaint or claim, you know, then we still have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Woodard, members, I really think this is something that the committee should consider. I mean, I think reasonable people could go for one or the other, but combining these two is a really, I think, exponentially increases really the risk and maybe puts the charter school organizations at a very high risk of not only being subject to, like I said, unilateral, arbitrary decision-making by the commissioner, but then getting rid of their ability to file a claim against it. I just think that that's not a very good combination. So, thank you.
And thank you, Representative Peterson. Department, would you come forward again and you need to comment on the issues that have been raised by Mr. Piccolo.
And Madam Chair, as the department comes down to do that, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, any good clause shown on the amendment that we pulled, I know that Representative Kath had mentioned that we ought to just leave it the way it was and kind of move from there. Just to clarify that, you know, this is new language that had been added in, as any good cause shown. If we were to leave it the way it was, it wouldn't have any good cause shown in the bill. So hopefully, Representative Greiling, you supported charter schools when it wasn't there, and I hope you will again, even if it's not later on as we continue to discuss the bill.
Ms. Hermanson or Mr. Hartman, would you walk us through the concerns that have been expressed by Mr. Piccolo and explain, probably begin with the indemnification, because I know that we had discussions in my office about that too, and I did support that addition. Ms. Hermanson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and I'll ask Mr. Hartman to add to this discussion, because we did have similar language in a proposal we brought forward. I think there's a couple issues involved here. We are now creating contracts between authorizers and schools, and even though we may approve them, at what point are we responsible for issues that arise out of failure to comply with that contractual arrangement? We've been and that's one issue. The other issue is we have found that in, I think Mr. Piccolo now indicated, as you look on page 11, that there is some type of insurance or liability coverage that we request. Most times they do have some indemnification language in that. We have found even after a charter school has been approved, sometimes they drop that coverage. And so we just want some assurances that as we are trying to do our due diligence of working with charters and enforcing your expectations, because they're pretty well laid out here in the law, And we can argue about the good cause, and I think I'm not a lawyer, but I do think there's some legal definitions around what good cause is too, but I'll let somebody else argue that one. We've been advised in particular by the AG's office and others that we do include some language in here, and it not only protects the commissioner, it's also to protect authorizers and others. The whole harmless also has a legal definition, if I'm not mistaken. You know, if you're doing inappropriate stuff and whatever, you still can't be held harmless. I mean, it's a term that's used to, if you're doing your due diligence and you're following your expectations, that you are then indemnified from decisions that you are trying to make in all good faith with what your expectations are. I think it's good language to have in the bill. I think it would help not only us, but authorizers and others who are trying to put together a contract and serve the needs of kids. And I don't know if Mr. Hartman...
Well, Ms. Hermanson, I believe that line 1110, the 10th line on page 11, that is language that the Attorney General's office did recommend
correct.
To me.
That's correct.
Yes.
Your next issue...
Mr. Hartman, were you going to comment at all on indemnification and the need for it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only addition to that is just the principle that who does what in a charter school or associated with a charter school is sometimes a confusing aspect for folks who come into charter schools and find themselves on boards of charter schools. And so charter schools are the ones that do, and the authorizer are the ones who hold them accountable to do what law requires them to do. And so this clarifies the responsibility in their contract between those two parties.
And then either Commissioner Hermanson or Mr. Hartman, on page 12, the question raised by Mr. Piccolo about the financial audit. I know that was your language that you brought to me.
I'm going to have Mr. Hartman address this also. I think it's this language is more to give so that we can deal with the issue more. It expedites us getting the information. I'll let Mr. Hartman address that.
Mr. Hartman.
Madam Chair, thank you. So charter schools are required to comply with public data requests. If a charter school does not fulfill a request, as Mr. Piccolo identifies, there are provisions in the charter law in which we could go through a process to withhold funds to compel a charter school to do that for not recognizing or complying with law. However, what this gets at, or the intent here, is if there is financial information that, say, an accounting firm or an auditor that's contracted by the charter school, that is, in a sense, public because it's been distributed to the charter school, that the accounting firm or the auditor would be responsible to provide that information that is public.
Mr. Hartman and Ms. Larson, I think, had some suggestions. I'm not sure if we're ready to go there, but is the use of the word entity, and maybe this is for Mr. Piccolo too, is that too broad? Could we perhaps substitute auditor for entity and or accountant, Mr. Hartman?
Yes, I believe that we could perhaps come up with something more specific there to address this, because Mr. Piccolo points out that this perhaps would go to banks and
yes,
other entities
correct.
More broadly than our intent when we suggested this.
Ms. Larson, you have some suggestions. Would you offer those, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, members, on the document S0055DE1-1, on page 12, line 6, perhaps delete entity and insert auditor or accountant, if that's consistent with the intent. And then I'm not certain about the extent of financial services. If we insert auditor or accountant, as a condition of providing auditing, accountant, or financial services. I don't know what of those three, one, two, or all of them, would technically be possible under this provision.
Ms. Hermanson?
Madam Chair, I guess at this point we don't have a suggestion to fix that. I think your concern is that we then get very broad on the, if we specify auditor or accountant, then providing financial services doesn't work. Is that what I'm understanding you to say?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Hermanson, the question is, would an auditor or an accountant be in a position to be providing accounting, auditing, or financial services that would provide information that may be of interest to the commissioner?
Ms. Hermanson.
Madam Chair, we might want to work on this. Mainly we're concerned about the audited information. I can't right now conceive of other, maybe they're providing budgetary services or investment of their assets. I'm not sure that that's what we want to get at, but right now I can't think of a way to word that differently. So,
Representative Woodard.
Madam Chair, I would recommend, I think we all get the intent, and I don't know that anyone in the committee really has a lot of heartburn over this. I would recommend that on this one that we work with the department and with the Charter School Association to find the language that we can all agree on. I don't think there's a whole lot of issue with the intent here. I think the issue is in the language, and we might have some suggestions from the AG's office, potentially, or even civil law.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on this one, I'm comfortable with that, with the discussion that we've had and the intent. I think we're all pretty much on the same page, just get the language precise. I do have one. While the department is still up there, unless you want to have another.
I did want Ms. Hermanson or Mr. Hartman to comment on Mr. Piccolo's concern on page 20, line 28, and line 29, the use of committed, that verb. Ms. Hermanson.
Madam Chair, when we get a complaint or there's an issue, what we do is kind of conduct an investigation. And final action or final determination basically is based on the results of that investigation or what we've been looking at. I'm assuming that, and this isn't our language, if I recall, but what we then do is we notify them of our determination and tell them what the corrective action should be or what our decision is. They then have the right to appeal. The term committed would, at least in my mind, and again, this is more of a legal question that I would want to go back and check, would mean that they have done something wrong, and that's been determined through this appeal process. And I'm trying to read the right after the public hearing may terminate. See, to me, this happens after we've gone through the whole process, and because it does talk after a public hearing may terminate. So to me, it's they've been found to have been in violation, and we are this is the decision. Obviously, even with our determination, there's always appeals to the court. We cannot preclude that. So that's my interpretation of what this would be.
Representative Benson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. We language arts folks sometimes are never in doubt, but sometimes we're wrong. I know that. But I'm just wondering, you know, to me, this seems like something that has already been determined. And would it be useful if, instead of striking on line 20.23, where it says the school has a history of, if that phrase, a history of, were retained, wouldn't that indicate then that a process had already transpired?
Ms. Larson, do you have a recommendation?
Madam Chair, members, consistent with what Ms. Hermanson has described in terms of the process that precedes this determination, one way perhaps to indicate the order of things, if on page 20, line 23, after the word the, insert, commissioner determines that the school has.
Commissioner Hermanson.
Madam Chair, on first blush, that seems to be more definitive.
Representative Woodard. Are you following insert on line 23 on page 20 after the word the commissioner determines that the, and then we have charter school, of course, has.
The charter school has, the commissioner has determined. Madam Chair, at first blush, I agree with Ms. Hermanson that that seems to make sense. I'm not sure that, I guess I'm trusting Ms. Larson that that does help us clarify that and make it more consistent with language throughout the bill and throughout the statutes. It seems very close to what it is now, but I do trust that it does clarify it from a standpoint of consistency.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Woodard, what this tries to do is indicate who the actor is. That's the problem with passive sentences in the statute.
Correct, yes.
Which has been drilled into my head by Ms. Larson, so thank you, Ms. Larson. I take that as gospel.
So, Representative Woodard, would you like to incorporate that change if indeed this seems to be amenable to the department as well and to Mr. Piccolo?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am fine with that that amendment.
Then let's incorporate that. Members, any discussion on this?
Yes. Madam Chair.
Ms. Hermanson.
The only question Mr. Hartman raises for me is if, say, someone else determines, I'm trying to think this, if that somebody's broken the law, that's beyond our purview. Maybe it's a different law. Is the intent that we still would then use that determination, that we would then be able to rely on that determination to make this decision? I'm trying to think through what other exceptions might be. So, and maybe Mr. Hartman.
Mr. Hartman.
So this particular aspect of statute is, I guess, regarded as if the authorizer does not follow through on something.
Correct.
And so, say there were a criminal finding in the judicial system. So the only concern that I raise is that this may limit the determination. And if there were an egregious act of criminal law that was found, that went through its process, and then the authorizer actually didn't follow through, but the commissioner felt that that was a major violation of the law, that essentially met the threshold here in this statute to terminate the contract, then she or he would still retain the ability to do that. I'm not sure if Ms. Larson's suggestion limits that ability.
Ms. Larson.
Right. Madam Chair, members, my apologies. I was talking with one of the members of your committee.
Mr. Hartman.
Madam Chair, Ms. Larson, I apologize. But what we're worried about is that if the suggestion that you have made, whether it limits it to the determination made by the commissioner only, or if, say, if there was a criminal finding in the judicial branch, that the commissioner would still retain the ability to terminate a contract if the authorizer did not do so, and the commissioner felt that it had met the major violation of law threshold identified here.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, that is a fair question. I don't know what other verb you would recommend, but without naming someone, it's not clear where the determination comes from or what it means to have committed. As between the ambiguity as it is in the document and naming the commissioner, I would
think that by saying the commissioner determines, at least you have the ability to say, well, the commissioner finds that this is the case. But I agree that there is some ambiguity in doing it that way.
And Madam Chair, just for the record, I guess if it's a criminal case, we're finding a violation of law, and I guess we just want to have on the record that we would probably be basing our determination on that. And so, I know if there's any other opportunity to clarify it, but I do think we want to at least reserve that right. So.
Madam Chair.
Members, Representative Woodard.
If I just might suggest that if we can make this change, I will definitely take the thoughts that we're talking about here to civil law, and they certainly will have some additional insight on the language, and I will explain the intent to them.
I think that's a good idea. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That one, I think, would be a good one for civil law. If we are, I have a different question for the
department. Yes, go ahead. Ask your different question.
Thank you. The changing of the number of authorizers from 3 to 10. Last year, when
Representative Greiling, repeat that.
Yes. I'm talking about the bill on page 3.
Yes.
Line 14, clause 5 there, where we're
the single-purpose authorizer.
Single-purpose authorizer, right. Going from current law of 3 up to 10. And the reason there were only 3 last year, I think, was it was new. The opportunity had just arisen. Nobody was quite sure how many there would be. Wanting to make sure they were good ones, you know, all the time that it takes for doing that, and now all of a sudden, just 1 year later, going to 10. I wanted to ask the department workflow-wise, you know, and how many are available. Obviously, you don't have to authorize that many, but I wondered if you had any critique of that number.
Representative Greiling, I believe that was a suggestion from someone other than the department. Ms. Hermanson.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, we have no problem with lifting that cap. In fact, going through an authorizer approval process is probably no different or not a lot different with a single-purpose authorizer as others. And we did have one excellent candidate that we'd had to actually not approve because we had the cap. So we do not see a problem with that.
Thank you. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad to hear that then. And I always think having more is better than just having a small number, as long as the workflow is good. And I just, then out of curiosity, how many do you think are, besides that one that you couldn't approve, are there any others that you know of? Or is that the only one? And then my last question would be, how, when other states have authorizers, do they have caps at all on the number of them?
Mr. Hartman.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, to your first question regarding the market of single-purpose authorizers. So last fall we saw 3 single-purpose authorizers submit applications for the 1 remaining spot. So there are 2 that have applied and shown interest in the past, actually 2 rounds of, actually 3 rounds of authorizer approvals that potentially would apply again. In terms of other states, actually, Mr. Hansen probably could answer that question much better than I could.
Sure, Representative.
Come to the table, please, and work through the chair, Mr. Hansen. Welcome back to the table. Say your name for the record again.
David Hansen from NACSA. Representative, states constrain their authorizing through different ways. I'm not aware of another state that has a numerical cap like this on a specific category. Usually they say that there shall only be a single statewide authorizer, or only LEA shall be allowed to authorize. So there's never a count in the sense like there's sometimes in some states no more than 100 charter schools or no more than 250 charter schools. So I've never seen this kind of situation before. But I'm familiar with the particular case that the superintendent commissioner mentioned, and we're very interested in them as well and would like to see them succeed and hope that you could find accommodations.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hansen, as long as you are here, how many nationally would you estimate single-purpose authorizers there are right now?
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative, authorizing varies so much by state. Let's put it this way. Minnesota is probably only one of 3 states that actually has the kind of relatively pluralistic authorizing regime that you have. Mm-hmm. Most states have it fairly constrained to maybe a couple of universities, or perhaps to a single board, or perhaps to the state education agency. So it's a unique provision.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Hansen. I think Ms. Representative Moran, you had a question earlier. If it's still appropriate, ask it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question on page 20.
Page 20.
Line 2031 through 2033. Can someone please tell me what is subdivision 3, paragraph 3? What is that and what does it mean?
Ms. Larson, can you help out?
And Ms. Larson, and Madam Chair.
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Hartman might have some insight as well that may spare Ms. Larson from having to answer all our questions.
Mr. Hartman.
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Representative. So the only provision that allows a charter school the opportunity to seek a change of authorizer if their contract is not renewed or terminated is in paragraph C above. So line 20.6 identifies that process. But that is limited to the non-renewal or termination by an authorizer. And so this language on line 20.31 through 20.33 identifies, it implies that there's a process that a charter school can go through to change authorizers if the commissioner terminates the contract, but that provision is not existent within paragraph D, where it is, the opportunity is there in paragraph C. So it's, I think it's legacy language. I can't be specific about that or certain about that, but it's inconsistent with the paragraph that precedes it.
Representative Moran.
Okay. My thought was, is there, what happens when a charter school may violate the church and school, the church and state law?
Mr. Hartman.
I'm sorry, could you please repeat
what that? Happens when or if a charter school violates the church and state law?
Mr. Hartman.
Madam Chair, Representative, charter schools are required in their contract to abide by all provisions in state and federal law that are identified and specifically applicable to charter schools. And so if you said church and state,
mm-hmm.
So there's a separation issue that's identified in the charter school law. So it is the responsibility of the charter school board to comply with that particular provision. It's the responsibility of the charter school authorizer to hold them accountable to that provision. And so if they violate it and are cited for that but do not remedy that problem, then it's the responsibility of the approved authorizer to follow through and either, if they've been given an opportunity, eventually if they don't comply and are in violation, then to terminate the contract.
Okay, thank you.
Are there other questions for the department?
Madam Chair,
Ms. Hermanson.
Since I'm up here and on page 9, the language from 9.6 to 9.23, it's a little unclear to us how this might operate. Let me just give you a couple of an example. If we have the same authorizer, it is a little bit less of a problem. Our concern becomes, say we have two different authorizers and we have some competition for the schools. We got two different contracts in place. How do we deal with the different contracts? Do they have to resubmit a new? I mean, operationally, we have some questions of how this would work. We don't want people getting into this competition for authorizers here, but also even internally, do we have to negate two contracts and come up with a new one? Because the contracts may be slightly different, too.
Mr. Piccolo.
We just have some questions about it.
I think Mr. Piccolo can answer that. I think this was his suggestion. Representative Dabney wonders why this took so long. Well, you know how many people we have out there who were weighing in on this? And I had to keep refereeing. Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair and members, this section resulted from a couple years ago we had the two deaf schools seek to merge, and there was no process for that to happen. And so it was all done kind of ad lib, and it took a substantial portion of MDE's time and everybody else's time to make it happen. So what we're trying to do here is to create a process to be followed in terms of how do you go about merging a school. It would require both the boards of the schools that wish to merge, as well as the approval of the authorizers. So if the authorizers and the boards don't agree, they can't go forward with this process. It's also based on people trying to do what's best for kids. And if people can't agree, then obviously it's not going to happen. But our belief is that people are trying to do the best they can by kids, and so to lay out a process for this to happen. Our hope is that people do not seek it as a competition, because there really is no benefit to one or the other authorizer, because they still get the same authorizer fee. They don't get an extra fee because they went out and being the authorizer. So what we're just trying to do here is lay out a process for this to take place in an orderly manner.
Are there others who have concerns or would like to testify in support? Welcome to the committee, Ms. Allsweiger. Please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allsweiger, Education Minnesota. And I think I've been around here for 17 years, and I've seen charter schools. It was already in place before I came, but as a teacher leader, I started seeing what was happening with charter schools. And Education Minnesota doesn't have an issue with charter schools. There are some very, very good charter schools in the state. We are concerned, however, about the accountability of charter schools. And what was the intention of starting charter schools? It was to empower teachers to form schools and include parents. And we had a cap of, I think, about 15 charter schools. So we had to have a majority of teachers on the school board. It then went to, I believe, 30. Ms. Larson can probably correct me if I get these numbers wrong. I think it went to a cap of 30, and then it went to a cap of 60, and then the cap was removed. And initially, who could be the sponsor at that time it was called, was very narrowly focused. There was a requirement that teachers be a majority on the charter board because we wanted to empower teachers to be free of some of the laws, rules, and regulations so that it could be more creative. One of the reasons that you passed the charter school law was to have some creativity and to learn from the charters. What were some of the good ideas if you relax some of those rules, laws, and regulations? Have you ever done a study to see what you learned from charters? That was the intent. Can you here today say, what are charters doing that should be replicated in the public schools? If you can't state that, then is there another reason for having charter schools? Again, I want to make it very clear, Education Minnesota is not opposed to charter schools. When was the last accountability study to look at curriculum, instruction, financial management? Has the board in the previous administration had trouble closing charter schools that were not performing like they should? They would say yes. My point in bringing some of this up is, this is a major expansion, and I'm kind of doing this in part to make sure everybody understands what this is. I really do have to take issue with the testifier that says there isn't anybody else who has a cap like this going from 3 to 10. I believe the statement he made, and I would stand corrected, is that in some states, only LEAs can charter schools. Yeah. Only LEAs are local education agencies. That is a cap. Because if you look at Minnesota's, that who can authorize a charter school, I would turn you to page 2, line 2.25, a school board. That would be like an LEA. Some states, that's all the organizations that are allowed to charter school, to sponsor a charter school. But in Minnesota, in addition to the LEA or the school board, we have an intermediate district and education district. 2.27, we have a charitable organization. And on 3.4, a Minnesota private college, we have is registered with HESO through the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. On line 3.9, we have another nonprofit corporation listed. And then 5, on line 3.14, we are now expanding it from 3 to 10. But this is important. These are single-purpose charter schools. Why is it not more work-intensive for the department to go from 3 to 10 compared to other charter sponsors? Because if you charter a school, you have to go through the approval process. But if you are a single-purpose charter authorizer, you get that one-time approval, and then it's kind of like a franchise of charter schools. Because once you have the authority to be this single-purpose authorizer, you can start up many charter schools. So I think when we say that there isn't a cap, I think that Minnesota, I mean, almost anybody can charter a school right now, and this isn't just going from 3 to 10. If each of these single-purpose charter 20 schools, now we've gone from not 30, but 100. And I will say right away that I am, or I should say at the end, that I am not an expert on charter school authorizers. I'm not an expert on all of the processes the department goes through. My main point is charter schools serve a very good purpose for some kids, for some communities, and that's a good thing. But we haven't even done the studies to find out what should be replicated, and we haven't done much in terms of accountability. And so we would ask that before you continue with an expansion, that let's make sure that these schools are doing what they should be for kids. And I'll be happy to answer any questions, and this might spark more questions for the department. Thank you.
Representative Peterson-Sandler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. Since we're expanding quite significantly the number of authorizers, could Education Minnesota be an authorizer? Or could they form a nonprofit to be an authorizer, and have they ever thought about doing that?
Ms. Allsweiler.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I believe there have been some discussions in the past about possibly doing that. I haven't been in on the inner circle about those decisions, but I know that there has been some discussion. I know that there have been some local unions who have also talked about doing that, but it would not be fair for me to represent some of the activities that have been out there. And it just goes to our point that, you know, charter schools, there isn't a problem with charter schools. And there should be some variety. But this kind of expansion, I think, goes a little far. And if Education Minnesota did start up a charter school, I would hope that you analyze that charter school, as we think you should do for all of them, to find out if the instructional practices are good, the financial management, and in all of those things, we would want to be under the same scrutiny as we think everybody should be.
Representative Peterson.
Well, just to follow up, it might be interesting if this passed and you have this law in effect that you start being very creative and be an authorizer and not just one school. You might want to start many schools, and it would be an interesting concept.
Ms. Alsbacher.
Just throwing it out for you to think about. We might want to bring it back to that executive group that talks about these things.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson. I think it would be a very creative idea, and it would be a very interesting proposition.
Ms. Alsweiger, don't you already have one nonprofit, your investment group? Is that not a nonprofit?
Madam Chair, I believe it is, but I'm not an expert on that, and I don't think they want to charter schools.
Thank you, Ms. Alsweiger. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Oh, Mr. Piccolo, will you come forward first, because I think you need to address some of the issues raised by Ms. Alsweiger. That's Madam, okay. Stay in the queue.
Madam Chair and members, just a couple things. One of the regrettable things about the new law is that the group of people, organizations that has withdrawn as being authorizers are local school districts. Most of the authorizers that have indicated that they are withdrawing have become our school districts. So we are not, in fact, going to end up with more authorizers. We, are, in fact, are going to end up with less authorizers, even if 10 single-purpose authorizers would seek approval and be approved, because we have already lost about a dozen authorizers through the new law. Second, the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers has been involved in a group that is looking at being an authorizer, and we applaud that, and that would be the first in the nation in a very unique model of things. So we have actually had conversations with them and have encouraged them to do so. So those are just two things. I think one of the things that just because there's more authorizers, the other thing that was said was that if you expand the number of single-purpose authorizers, there's an exponential growth in the number of schools. Under the law, every authorizer must submit an individual affidavit for every individual school they wish to authorize. And that affidavit is reviewed by MDE. And so they cannot authorize that school until that review and approval is given by MDE. So this does not expand the number of schools unless those schools are approved also by MDE through the affidavit process.
Thank you, Mr. Pickle. There was another testifier. Please come forward. And Mr. Nathan, you'll be next in the queue. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Lori Maxfield, Associate Dean of Education, St. Catherine University, and I'm coming to speak in favor of extending the deadline for authorizers. We currently are a sponsor of City Academy, and we need just a little more time, just as Mr. Piccolo has pointed out, with the local education agencies being able to put together a very high-quality proposal to be an authorizer. We could use the summer as well to get our proposal finalized and cleaned up.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Nathan. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Nathan. I direct the Center for School Change at McAllister College. I've been an urban public school teacher and administrator in St. Paul. Our children all have attended St. Paul Public Schools and graduated from them, and my wife recently retired after being a public school teacher working with kids with special needs for the last 33 years. I also have been a PTA president. I speak only tonight for myself. I'm not an advocate of charters or districts. I'm an advocate of excellent public schools. So I'd like to make four quick points. First, the legislature in this state has been recognized throughout not only the United States but throughout the world for its careful attention to quality, not just more charters, but more quality. And 2 years ago, and last year and this year, 3 years in a row, national organizations have identified Minnesota as having the nation's best charter law, because you are not concerned only about quantity, you are also concerned about quality. That has been a bipartisan issue. It's not one party or another. That's been a bipartisan issue. And I know a number of you have talked about this over the years. Some of you are more recent here, but it has been a bipartisan shining moment for Minnesota to be concerned about quality. So what that says to me is that it is advisable for the legislature to give this another year, because we want to do it right, because the kids and the taxpayers deserve this to be done right. And for a variety of reasons, it took longer than one initially expected to get this process going. We don't want to rush the authorizers. We don't want to rush the State Department. The kids and the families and the taxpayers deserve quality. So I want to strongly recommend that you do approve that portion of it. Secondly, a question was raised: do we know something about high-quality charters? And the answer is, we certainly do. Have studies been done? They certainly have. I want to note that the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, came to see the nation's first charter, located no more than 10 minutes from this room. And the co-founder of that school is sitting in this room behind me, Milo Cutter. That school has been visited by people from throughout the world. The Star Tribune did a study this last year. This wasn't a Center for School Change study. It wasn't a Minnesota Association of Charter Schools study. It was a study done by the Star Tribune. And the Star Tribune looked at the schools that were serving high percentages of low-income kids and what were the characteristics of those schools. And it found, in looking at the schools, the 20 schools that had the highest percentage of low-income kids and high academic achievement in reading and math, that of the 20, 16 were district, 16 were charter, and 4 were district, which is to say we have some outstanding district and some outstanding charter. You have heard earlier this year, Representative Myra, and also the governor and also the commissioner talking about the need to identify outstanding and district schools. And I want to again commend that legislation, whether it's exactly the way the governor or exactly the way the representative suggests. We need to identify outstanding district and charter public schools. I hope that's one thing that comes out. So I want to strongly encourage you to stand for quality. And I do want to emphasize the point that we know the characteristics of outstanding schools. We have learned from them. And that is why I think that Representative Myers' legislation is so important. But I do want to emphasize we have learned many lessons. And it has been fundamentally because you and your colleagues on a bipartisan basis have stood up not just for quantity, as some state legislatures have done, you have stood for quality. I believe strongly that the effort to have another year is an effort to have more quality. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Representative Norton has a question for you, Mr. Nathan.
Thank you, and I very much appreciate what you've said, and I've been critical of charters in the past. I've watched them very carefully. I know you and I have differed on this, and I've tried being open-minded. But I just have to ask, I know there are great charters in the state of Minnesota. There's also great regular public schools, old-fashioned schools. What I was concerned about recently is we had our discussion on voucher schools, and they handed out the handout that was filled with all the schools that are failing to perform and were on this list. Half of them were charter schools or alternative learning centers. And so for me, I want to continue to support the strong charter schools, and I totally agree with you, and I wish we would slow down, and I'm seeing, you know, too much happening too quickly. What can we do? What should we be doing outside of moving ahead quickly on some things that maybe we shouldn't? What can we do to deal with that other end, which is the hundreds of schools that aren't doing well? We keep not addressing that.
Mr. Nathan.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think that's an extremely critical question. I think the legislature needs to make clear to the authorizers that it really does expect for there to be clear and explicit goals, and it expects the contracts to have clear and explicit information about what those goals are, and it expects the authorizers to perform as you have said. And I think that message needs to go from the legislature to the authorizers. I think it needs to go from the legislature to the Department of Education. I can tell you, as a volunteer, I was asked to serve this year as a volunteer, and I was glad to do it as a volunteer, to help review some applications. And we looked at some of the authorizers, some of the people who were coming in. And I want to give credit to David Cartman and his colleagues, because there was a process by which some authorizers were not approved, and they should not have been approved. And I'm not going to take your time to go through chapter and verse, but there was, for example, an organization that wanted to be an authorizer that said, when asked, how are you going to deal with kids with special needs, they said, well, if a school that we are going to authorize has that issue of a lot of special ed kids applying, then we'll come up with a policy. I'm sorry, that's violating federal law. They didn't even understand federal law. We had one of the authorizers that said that did not have any specific expectations about what schools had to do to improve. We had an authorizer, a group that wanted to be an authorizer, that said we asked the schools that have been authorized by this group, can you give us two or three examples of what you have to do in order to have your contract renewed? And they couldn't. And frankly, some of us became very unpopular for a while because we insisted that authorizers had to follow the law. So I would say you need to convey to the department, and you need to convey that you do expect, you, the legislature, expects clear, explicit, measurable goals, not all of which have to be standardized tests, but you do expect clear and explicit goals, and you do expect the department to come back and return and describe what it has done to make sure that legislative intent is carried out.
Madam Chair?
Representative Norton.
Thank you. So is your recommendation that we wait to fully implement the changes after the extension for one more year to implement the laws that really we just put in effect in 2009 and 10? We made changes again last year, as I recall, before we continue moving forward? I mean, that's kind of where I'm at right now, and I'm wondering if that's what you're suggesting?
Mr. Nathan.
Madam Chair, Representative, the most important thing that I'm suggesting is that the legislature extend the time for 1 year by which the authorizers can have their ideas approved, and allow a year's worth of grace for the schools. I don't have to tell anybody in this room that this is challenging time for public education, whether they're district or charter. And we work very closely with both district and charter. And I can tell you that in the charter world, directors are scrambling, trying to figure out what they can say to families that are wanting to know, will we be approved? They're having to say to educators, we don't know if you have a job. So I think it is in the best interest of quality that the legislature extend the time by which the authorization can be approved, and the schools would then have to be approved within by June 30th of 2012. But I think that's what leads to quality, not rushing, but quality. But I also think, and I'll be very brief, I know you have many things to do tonight, I also think that the legislature needs to be clear with the department and with the authorizers that you expect there to be clear and explicit goals and so on and so forth. I also want to make one brief comment about your point about the unions. I think one of the most exciting developments in Minnesota is the fact that the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers has come forward and said that they want to work with a group of people to be an authorizer. I think that is historic. I don't think I know, as Mr. Piccolo just said, that is historic. I think that is the highest form of professionalism, an example, not the only, but an example of the highest form of professionalism. Plus, when we talk about the impact of the charter idea, we have site-governed schools, about which we may talk more about tonight. And that is an outgrowth, in part, of the fact that the union leaders, to their credit, said, we need to create some new options within school districts. So one of the benefits of the charter idea has been that union leaders stood out and said, we need to create new opportunities for families and for the professionals who are in our districts. And I think that you ought to get some credit for that, because you have stood for that for a long time. And I think that the legislature ought to get some credit for creating legislation that helps produce that kind of feeling.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Are there any other questions, members? Is there anyone else in the audience, last chance, to speak in support of Senate File 55 as amended, or to raise concerns? Representative Woodard, your closing comments, please, and your promise that you're going to keep working on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, and I appreciate the dialogue. I think this was a very good conversation, and I think we're all in the same intent, so I appreciate that. I know that this, in its original form, passed, I think, without a single negative vote as part of the Dabney Amendment on the floor last week, so I appreciate that. And these are some of the things that we need to discuss, and so I'm glad we had the opportunity to do that. So I appreciate that, and with that, I renew my motion to move Senate File 55 as amended and refer it to the House Civil Law Committee.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails, and the bill is passed and re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Thank you very much, Representative Woodard. Representative Detmer. Welcome to our committee, Representative Detmer.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you, Chair Erickson.
Members, I'd like to move House File 672 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in a later bill. And Representative Detmer, you have a DE-1-2 amendment, correct?
Yes.
So I will move that for you. Members, I am moving the H-0672 DE-1-2 amendment. Would you explain your amendment, please, Representative Detmer?
Madam Chair, it's just to get the language in to fit the bill. And this is language that was brought back to me after the original language, and we just wanted to get it in the right author's form.
Madam Chair,
you also have another piece of amendment that you can't accept because it came in after the deadline. But I just wanted to get it out in case this bill goes forward. That's the language that
we'd
like to put on.
Yes, we'll deal with that in just a minute. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE-1-2 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Greiling, as long as Representative Mariani is not here tonight, seeing that the amendment was prepared at 4:16, I think Representative Detmer's a little concerned that it probably be added. Would you have an objection to that?
Is this the amendment right here?
Yes. I think there are some questions about Volunteers of America. Well, why don't I let you explain the amendment?
Madam Chair, that came from the authorizer, and they wanted that information, that language on there.
Members, this is the H-0672-A2 amendment. Representative Detmer, why don't you... I can't move it unless Representative Greiling agrees.
Madam Chair, I don't know what it is, so it's hard then, too. So maybe we could talk about it, and then we
should
decide.
Representative Detmer, would you explain it, please?
Well, the authorizer, the Volunteer of America, they just were looking at the language at the last minute, and they wanted that language on there so that they would agree with the bill. So I agreed to do that, but I told them that it's past the deadline, which was 3 o'clock yesterday, and I said if it goes forward, we'll make sure that we get that language on there.
So, members, we're looking at page 2, line 29, and we're deleting the first and inserting, if Volunteers of America of Minnesota approves LILA's, as they're called, application for reinstatement. And then on line 34, we're deleting the phrase, if Volunteers of America of Minnesota, and then deleting lines 35 and 36, and on page 3, deleting lines 1 through 4.
Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, this looks like it's just getting it in shape.
It's more or less technical.
Right.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the H-0672-A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted, and now, Representative Detmer, your bill is in the order, I believe, in which you would like it. Would you please begin?
Thank you, welcome to
the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. There was, at one time, I was part of this committee, and I was also part of the K-12 Finance Committee. This term, I'm not, because I'm the Vice Chair of the Higher Education. But what we're looking at here is a new concept. And about a year ago, I was called in to LELA, which is the Lakes International School, and also the school district that I taught in for 34 years, to sit in on a meeting. And the meeting was conducted by the superintendent and also the director of LELA, Lakes International. And I sat in and just listened. And I got pretty curious of what they were thinking about doing. And my years as a teacher, 34 years, I always was looking at ways to improve and to my curriculum and my courses that I taught. And I've always had a heart for education. In fact, I still do some subbing when I'm not down here. And how is everybody doing, by the way? Does everybody need to stand up and just stretch their legs first? Okay.
Just about.
If I can ask everybody, Madam Chair, could everybody just stand up and stretch
idea.
Their legs,
Thanks.
Please?
You can tell he's a teacher.
A final teacher.
Everybody.
I know it.
And this too.
That's the brain.
Oh, my God. Yes, we have. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Detmer.
You're welcome, Madam Chair. I needed that too. My head hit the pillow this morning at 4 o'clock. Again, it's a new concept, and I sat in on that first meeting. I was pretty impressed what these two schools are doing together in Forest Lake, where I live and raise my family. Just a little geographical layout of the district. We have about in the school district we have about 6,800 students. It's one of the larger schools square mile wise, about 242 square miles in Forest Lake. We have 8 elementary schools, K through 6. We have 2 junior highs, 7 through 9. We have a high school, 10 through 12. We have 2 charter schools in Forest Lake. We have a Catholic St. Peter's school. We have a Baptist Academy just down the road. Lakes International, LELA, has 17 different school districts that send their kids to the school. They have 600 students in the charter school. 400 are local students from Forest Lake, and there's approximately 200 students from other districts. 90% of those students go on and enter the junior highs at Forest Lake. We also had a meeting later this year. On March 16th, we had a meeting here at the Capitol. We met with Commissioner Brenda Casilius. I also had a brief meeting with Mr. Eugene Piccolo. And when the language was drawn up, I made sure that everybody got copies of the language, the parties that were involved that I spoke to. And so we had a lot of back and forth in language and changing and so forth. But the surrounding districts that surround Forest Lake, District 831, we have North Branch and Chisago just to the north of us. We have Anoka, Blaine, Coon Rapids, St. Francis to the west of us. We have Centennial, White Bear Lake, and Centennial and Stillwater just to the south of us. And to the east of us, we got the St. Croix River, the river, and Wisconsin, okay? But there is a fiscal note, too, and I was surprised that it's actually saving the state money. But with me today, I have two people that I've known over the years, Superintendent Linda Madsen. By the way, Superintendent Madsen was a student of mine.
That's pretty awesome.
She graduated from Forest Lake High School, went on to the University of Minnesota, came back and was hired as a teacher, got into other areas of administration, and was hired as the superintendent just about a year ago. She's the right person in the right place at the right time. Also, Director Cam Hedlund from LELA. Cam and I go back many years. We coached soccer together. He taught at Forest Lake in the school district, and now is the director at LELA, Lakes International. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to my two, I could say, colleagues here, and I will ask Superintendent Linda Madsen to take it from here.
And members, before we go on, keep in mind this is a pilot project. This is a charter, allowing a charter to become a school within a school district, kind of like that site base that we created a while back, Representative Greiling. So please ask lots of questions tonight. This is brand new, and I'm sure after we hear from our testifiers, we're going to have a lot of questions, and I want you to ask those because this is something
that we really need to vet. Superintendent, welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you. Well, good evening, Madam Chair. I'm Linda Madsen, Superintendent of Schools. Also welcome to the members of the House Education Reform Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you to discuss a proposed pilot project that I strongly believe would greatly enhance educational opportunities for both elementary and secondary school students in the Forest Lake area. As Representative Detmer mentioned, I am the superintendent of Forest Lake Schools, and I have been a teacher and administrator in Forest Lake for 30 years. It's a great privilege to speak to you tonight regarding House File 672. Despite the apparent complexities, and there certainly are complexities when attempting to join a charter school with a school district, the concept behind this bill is actually quite simple. Under this five-year pilot project, Lakes International Language Academy would temporarily suspend its status as a charter and effectively become a school within District 831. Alila students would remain at the same building they're currently attending. The teaching staff at the school would remain essentially the same, and the great teaching being done there would continue as in the past. No disruption to the learning environment would need to occur. The school would be financed, regulated, supervised, held accountable, and basically operate in the same manner as every other school in the Forest Lake school system, with the following exceptions. Number one, employees at Leela would remain at-will employees during the five-year term of the pilot, rather than immediately becoming part of local bargaining units. Two, the nonprofit entity that currently operates the charter would maintain the current lease, and lease aid would continue as it had when the school was a full charter. Number three, the teachers at Leela would continue to be part of the QCOMP program. Teachers who are part of the Forest Lake Education Association are currently not part of that program, and they would remain as non-participants unless a new agreement between the district and the union could be worked out. In all of the respects, Leela would be defined as a district elementary school during the term of the pilot project. District 831 would be the agency of oversight and would provide reporting to the Minnesota Department of Education as it does for any other school in our district. The Forest Lake Area School Board would be the ultimate authority over Leela as it is, again, with any other school within our district. The reason a bill is necessary for this pilot project is because there is currently no provision under state law that allows existing charter schools to become part of an existing school district. This bill is an opportunity for our school district, an opportunity for Leela, and an opportunity for the education community in Minnesota to see firsthand the next important step in the charter school work that our state has undertaken over the past decade. It's a chance to see whether the innovative approaches born of a successful charter school such as Leela can be brought into a school district and thereby be fully realized in a more traditional setting. But most importantly, it's an opportunity for our students in our area to gain the full benefits of Leela and the Forest Lake Area Schools can jointly offer, truly the best of both worlds. What better way for a traditional school district to gain the creative benefits of a charter school than to bring that school into the district, allowing for direct interaction and complete collaboration? Members of the committee, I would ask that you support this and allow this pilot project to move forward. You have before you two examples of highly successful educational institutions whose leaders wish to join together in a partnership that would not only greatly benefit the students of our respective schools, but would allow you, the members of the legislature, to see what could potentially be accomplished when educational innovation is fully developed. I thank you very much for allowing me the time to speak with you tonight on this important topic.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hedlund.
I am Cam Hedlund, Director at Lakes International Language Academy. Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the House Education Reform Committee, Representative Detmer, and honored guests. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of the proposed pilot project. Dr. Madsen has laid out the mechanics of the proposed pilot project. I would like to talk briefly about our history together and why I believe this project should go forward. Before becoming the director of Lakes International Language Academy, I was a Forest Lake Area Schools elementary principal. I was part of a task force to study immersion education along with other Forest Lake leaders, including Dr. Madsen and the folks who went on to start Leela. I became so convinced that immersion was one of the best financial values in education that I knew I needed to become involved. The charter school was just forming, and they believed they talked me into joining them to help start Lakes International Language Academy. Little did they know that I was hoping they would ask and couldn't wait to get started. When you consider students leaving Leela in the sixth grade are fully bilingual for the same educational dollar as the monolingual school down the street, it's a pretty good deal. Dr. Mattson and Forest Lake Area Schools share our vision of having multiple language experiences available for all elementary and secondary students. From our first days of being a charter, Forest Lake Area Schools has partnered with us on many facets of our program. Not only the traditional areas such as transportation and food service, but areas such as special education, extracurriculars, nursing, and other areas that let us spend more time developing program and less time managing minutia. However, the program that has received national attention is the 7th through 12th grade Spanish Immersion Maintenance Program provided by Forest Lake Area Schools for our students and with our continued consultation. I was just talking yesterday to Mark Peterson, one of the principals of that program. He was telling me the welcome challenge of trying to find enough time for electives for our students' schedules. He went on to explain that several of our former students who are enrolled in 2 to 3 content courses taught in Spanish are also enrolled in French and doing very well, in addition to holding significant parts in the school play and participating in other activities. I believe by being part of the Forest Lake Area Schools, we can together develop those programs to a much greater extent. We also believe that the population for those wishing second and third languages for their children is almost limitless, and that all students should have access to immersion programs. An interesting note that Representative Detmer already noted is that we draw from 17 different school districts. We have kids coming from as far away as North Branch to the north, Arden Hills and Woodbury to the south, the river to the east, and Ramsey and Anoka to the west. We are really the only language opportunity north of the first ring of suburbs at this point. The flexibility of this pilot gives the added push to make these ideas reality and with much greater speed and efficiency than either of us could do alone. We truly believe that we can be a model of what collaboration can accomplish while at the same time being an experimental site where innovation can flourish and take root. I believe the state will be amazed at what a hybrid partnership will be able to accomplish. I understand there are many who will testify against this bill. My assessment of that is those who don't really know us are often skeptical of our motivation. When we say we want more for all students in our area, they often respond, "No, really." We say we want more for all students in our area, they often respond, "No, really, what do you hope to get out of this?" And those who know us well say, "Wonderful, I hope this goes through because we know the potential you have. My hope is that you will get to know us well enough to be in the second camp. Thank you for your time, and we welcome your questions."
Thank you very much, Mr. Headland. Questions for these two testifiers, members? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to the committee. Superintendent Mattson or Mr. Headland, can you tell me who is the authorizing group right now for the charter school?
Mr. Headland.
Okay. And are they participating in it and they feel good about this?
Mr. Headland, go through the chair, please. Mr. Headland.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative, they were part of the discussions. We had 2 or 3 meetings with them. They have concerns like many others. The language you heard at the end, amended and added, makes them comfortable. We would like them to be part of an oversight committee. I thought it was interesting that the representative from EM mentioned that really they like charters but don't know what values are brought forward. Part of our bill is that study ongoing, and at the end of the pilot that we really would report back to you exactly the kinds of things that you can expect from that kind of collaboration. And I do believe they're excited to be a part of that. We're excited to have them along the way. And there's an escape clause, if you haven't read this, that either side can remove themselves. Mm-hmm. And so we're very happy that they're willing to be not only part of the the process, but part of the escape clause should be needed.
Representative Peterson asks. Sandra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have a couple of questions. Last year, I know Representative Benson passed, you know, the site-governed schools, and I'm wondering, I can see one of the advantages in lease aid. I mean, there are a couple of advantages that I think you have by going charter. Why not the site-governed school instead? Is there...
We really looked at that in our... Madam Chair?
Thank you. Mr. Atland.
And Representative Peterson. We really looked at the site-governed school model. That's what got us interested in thinking this was even a possibility. And we actually had some studies done what that would take. And what we realized in that is there is no provision in the site-governed school legislation, again, to let a charter school move in its entirety into the school system. We would have to completely disband everything that we have, sell our assets, become nothing, and have it bubble up from within the school district. And we've got 600 students and their parents that makes them a little queasy.
Representative Peterson.
Well, that would be difficult. The other thing I looked at, Madam Chair, is the... You would receive a different funding mechanism for the school?
Mr. Hedlund.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, we would become a school in Forest Lake and would be the funding mechanism like any other elementary school.
Hmm. Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, would the and representatives here from White Bear, how about the lease aid? Would you get lease aid then?
Mr. Hedlund.
We have a building company that has bondholders and a very good relationship with them at this point. We would request that the legislature allow lease aid to continue during the pilot or until we have separation to try and move that asset to the district. Right now, if we were to separate, it would become very messy. That cost is already within the state budget, so we're asking during the pilot that it be left as is, and that at the end of the pilot that be dealt with and decided how to handle that, if it simply property reverts to the district or whatever together we decide.
Representative Peterson.
And finally, Madam Chair, I had a question also about the staff. It says they're at will and the rest of the staff are organized. What if the employees at that school wanted, it would maybe be a separate contract, but they wanted to have some kind of bargaining contract. Does this say they have to be at will, or is the intent to keep their working conditions separate and unique for that school?
Mr. Hedlund.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, it really is the second or the latter. There are some unique characteristics of immersion teachers. The state doesn't really care if they can speak Spanish or not, even though we're a Spanish immersion school. And so we have to follow elementary licensure, those kinds of pieces, but for bumping rights and other pieces, it's very critical that just having Spanish on your license is not good enough. We need a level of proficiency that's quite high. It's issues like that, and again, it's the issues if we were to meld those groups right now and then separate would have a real mess, but we're not opposed to looking at that. We would prefer that it was deferred to the end of the pilot. Again, that if something we want to continue long term, we're fully prepared to look at that and deal with it. If the wish is that we deal with that now, then our recommendation is that we would have a separate agreement that perhaps was a little less burdensome and had some more flexibility and freedom, but we're not opposed to it. And I would say we could change the amendment instead of saying will be to could be, which would allow perhaps that bargaining, as they do now as a charter school. Mm-hmm. They've chosen not to, but then could even as part of Forest Lake.
Representative Peterson, go ahead.
Finally, Madam Chair, thank you for indulging me in all these questions.
No, but that's good. You keep asking.
I do think the... I think that would be a good idea, because, but I also would agree that it would be, I think, a separate
allow you to have two, basically, or a contract within a contract or something, right, to keep the uniqueness of what is needed in that charter school within a separate contract situation. But it would be nice to have that as an option. So that's just my comment. But interesting idea.
So, Mr. Hedlund, or Superintendent Madsen, is one of your major reasons that you want to make sure that the immersion concept continues and that it wouldn't if you didn't have this relationship? Mr. Hedlund.
That is certainly one of the aspects. When we first started our school, almost immediately our parents are asking, what happens to our students in the seventh grade when they leave you? Because you, as anything, you've got to keep language or you lose it. And so we started looking, do we start a second school immediately ourselves? People were pretty worn out at that point. We looked to surrounding districts to see what was being offered. We talked to Forest Lake, and Forest Lake was very interested in helping us develop something that really attended to what we thought our students' needs were. So it's not that we're unhappy at all. We're extremely happy. We've received national recognition. My comments about talking to the principal the other day is that we ongoingly nurture that program together, and it's, I think, extremely successful. As Ms. Representative Detmer mentioned, 90% of our students, although two-thirds of our kids come away, you know, 50 miles away, 90% of them are moving on to Forest Lake, and that didn't happen the first year. We have built the trust, both of us, to do that. But there are aspects of our program. We're an international baccalaureate school. Our parents would really like to see that move forward to the middle level, to the diploma level, some other pieces that I believe the school district is receptive to, and Linda can speak to that. But we would like to be able to help that firsthand and be there and see that flourish. We are starting in a Chinese track for immersion ourselves. We don't want to get into what we have, they have. We think together we can expand just tons of opportunities for kids and provide in the northern suburbs lots of exciting language opportunities.
Superintendent Madsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think also some of the things that we can do together, and as you know, Mr. Hedlund said, there are a lot of things that we do cooperatively right now with our staff. We started an immersion program ourselves this year, and staff from Lakes International was part of the interview team. They helped us put that together. They help us evaluate, et cetera. So there's a lot of different things that we do. At the same time, if they were part of our school district, we'd have more opportunities to work with them with staff development, even administrative meetings. You know, Mr. Hedlund would be part of those. Not that he can't do that now, but at the same time, if you're part of a system, you have many more opportunities to have conversations, to learn from each other. We've learned so much from them, and I think perhaps they've learned a few things from us as well, just with the relationship that we have. We just think there are endless possibilities if we were all in one organization.
And Superintendent, what is your budget for Forest Lake?
Madam Chair, the general fund budget is about $64
million. $64 million. And Superintendent, would this result in a property tax increase because the charter school is aid, but you're aid and levy?
No, I'm going to let Mr. Martini, our business manager, answer that.
Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Larry Martini. I'm the business manager for Forest Lake Area School Districts. And I understand that there is a fiscal note prepared for the language in front of you. It looks like it's approximately $150,000 of state savings because the aid component for the charter school does become an aid levy mix for the combined entity. That $150,000 is less than any of our typical adjustments on property taxes, which for the school district are last year about $16 million.
And members, we don't have the fiscal statement because we're a reform committee, but I needed to ask the question anyway.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Greiling.
Madam Chair, where is this committee going to finance then? There's a fiscal note.
Well, I was just going to lay it over, but we can send it on. We can send it on to Katewell. It's up to the committee.
But laying it over is fine, as long as it's not. But when it does go somewhere, it seems it has to go to finance.
It would have to, absolutely. Right. Yes. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to any of the testifiers or Representative Detmer, I did step out, so I apologize, but I'm not understanding why. Is Voice of America terminating the contract with Leela? What is motivating this change?
Mr. Hedlund, or Superintendent Manson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll start off by talking a little bit about that. I think that there... we really do feel that the single reason, if you're looking for, you know, kind of that broad look, is that we feel we can build a stronger language program if we are together under District A31. There's, again, opportunities for the staff development, for administration to work together, for teachers to work together, and to have a more comprehensive and strong language program. So that is really the overall reason why we're looking at this.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then perhaps for Representative Detmer, the issue is raised already about the district can do this. It's a site-governed school. And challenges were identified by Mr. Hedlund in that. Why amend the charter school law to facilitate this? Why not then amend the site-based school law instead? Because that really is, I think, the most natural expression of what you're trying to do is the site-governed school model.
Mr. Hedlund.
Madam Chair, the primary reason is that we're not interested. This is an experiment. We're not interested in amending permanent charter school law or site-governed law. We're asking for a suspension of those pieces of the law toward us for 5 years. While we really do get to experiment and maneuver things, it was part of the meeting we had in March down here that convinced us to look at a pilot rather than changing law for the entire state. But the site-governed school has the issue, again, of at-will employees or union employees. That it doesn't define that very well. It doesn't allow, you'd have to amend it to allow us to even come in. It was one of these as we decided, and ultimately maybe in 5 years or sooner, if good things along the way are happening, that's the law you'd like to amend to allow others to try this kind of concept. But we did not want to be here so sure that you ought to amend law based on what we're proposing.
Representative Dabney, any other?
Well, last question, Madam Chair, and I guess you are asking us to amend law. So I'm a little confused with that, but I guess I'm struggling with the term pilot, because this isn't a pilot. This is a special consideration. And I guess the question for Representative Detmer is, if this is a good idea, why stop at one school in one school district? Why not five schools in five districts, or five districts in however many schools, or 10 districts? And I mean, if this truly were a pilot, we'd say we want some to be in the urban and some to be rural and some to be suburban, and then we'd, after 5 years, we'd have a report and we'd look to see what the pluses and minuses were of this. And you get none of that out of a one-off.
Madam Chair,
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, Representative Devine, I think if this goes forward, I think other districts are going to be, and charter schools are going to be looking at this. I know we don't have any examples of a site-based school. I know that this new legislation, and if we wanted to go to a site-based school with Leela, they would have to disband their charter. They didn't want to do that. They want to keep their charter concept. And I trust the judgment of these two colleagues here that what they're doing, and after sitting in on meetings, that what they're doing, they know what they're doing. They know their schools. They know their parents. They know the district. And the most important, they know the students, and they know what they're doing with their curriculums. So I guess I tend to trust that. And my years as an educator, I've had some good administrators over the years, and maybe I haven't had so many good administrators. They come and go. Superintendents and principals come and go. But I can assure you that I've had some great ones, and two of my colleagues that are sitting next to me are two of those. And that's just a compliment that I give them and what they're doing with their schools and what I hear in the community with parents. And I've been there for going on 39 years now in that community. And I think we got something good going there. And I guess I could call it the Forest Lake Miracle. I said the word. So and if this goes...
that's an inside joke.
Yes. Yes. I guess I have pride in our community and the years that I taught there, and if I was coming out of college, and as I've mentioned this many times, I'd do it all over again. It's a great community to teach in, and I like what's going on there, and I'm excited about this. And people told me, are you sure you want to get involved in this? And I said, yeah, I want to get involved in this. See, my job was to get them to the table and speak to the committee. That's my job as a representative for these people and the communities that I represent. Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One other question, and I think it's alluded to in the language, and you probably talked about it, but do you see any potential conflict between the authorizer and you as school administrators? I mean, you said as school administrators you're in charge, but yet the authorizer certainly has a role or some legislative responsibility. Do you see any conflicts or problems with that?
Superintendent Madsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'll also defer to Mr. Hedlund on that, other than to say we have had, you know, meetings with them and have had conversations with them and would welcome them to be part of that evaluation and part of the work that we do during this five-year project. So we certainly are willing to have them at the table and to be giving suggestions and ideas and having conversations. So we certainly welcome that.
Mr. Hedlund.
Madam Chair. Within the bill, it specifically says that their rights as an authorizer are suspended, that our rights as a charter are suspended, except for the pieces that Dr. Madsen had pointed out. So that there's no conflict during the pilot, but we want them involved in the evaluation and also to keep that positive relationship throughout the entire piece.
Representative Kiefer.
Oh, just a quick question. I'm looking at the letter that you read in. Mr. Hedlund?
Yes.
Is the school K through 12?
Mr. Hedlund.
Madam Chair, our school is K-6, but we have a joint program. We don't have a joint program. Forest Lake has a program where our students move on to, and we help oversee that and supervise it, not supervise it, but consult and make sure that our kids' needs are being met.
Representative Kiefer.
Just a quick follow-up then. Because I was looking at it says you've got an international baccalaureate program. I just wonder, that's in the regular Forest Lake Public High School?
Mr. Hedlund.
Madam Chair, no, that is in our school. It's a primary years program. The international baccalaureate has moved to three different programs at this point.
Okay.
Members, I think we'll go on to other testifiers. Are there others out in the audience who would like to testify in support of this, I'll call it an experiment? And Representative Breiling will call it a miracle, yeah. Representative Detmer, but we'll wait to see if it's a miracle. It's an experiment right now. Are there others who would like to testify in support of this proposal? Please come to the table, say your name for the record, and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Rob Rayfield. I'm the school board president for Forest Lake District 831.
Sir, would you spell your last name?
Rapheal.
Thank you, sir, and begin your testimony.
I just wanted to come up here and say, when Superintendent Madsen and Director Hedlund were talking about the relationship between the charter school and the kids that were in the charter school moving into our junior high and high school, I've just been amazed by that relationship between the two leaders and being able to build that program. And the thing I want to point out about that is that that was all about the students, making sure that the students get that great bilingual education in grade school, but then continuing that into their junior high and then keeping that consistent. And I was on the board when that was coming forward, and it's really a source of pride for me that we were able to work that out. And it has nothing to do with a charter school. It has nothing to do with our large district. It has to do with looking at how do we get those kids a great bilingual education, how do we continue their education, and the leaders of both schools work together. And I really see this change in statute as a way of really building on that, really taking what we've done so far and taking that innovation and leveraging that throughout our entire district. And for me, I see it as really a win-win for the kids of the district and the parents, and I'd really like to see it move forward.
So, sir, you use open enrollment for the students from Lila to enter your school, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Are there questions for this school board member? Thank you, sir. Are there others in the audience who would like to testify in support?
Just for a little side note here.
Representative Detmer.
Chairman Raphael, just a little side note. He was my opponent when I first ran for office. So. And we've become very good friends.
Well, welcome. That's great. Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Shannon Peterson. Madam Chair, honored guests, I am happy to be here tonight. I am one of the founding board members for Lakes International Language Academy, which is located in the hospital where I was born. And Representative Detmer was also my teacher.
Oh.
It is a small town. Lakes International started after several years of trying to start as a district program. It was not the right time for the district to start the program. There was community angst about it, about language immersion, about starting anything new when there were so many financial constraints on the district. Since then, we were able to start as a charter and have proven that it not only works academically and does good things for students and teaches second languages along with all of the academics that students are expected to learn in K-6, but also that we can do it without huge amounts of money that the public initially was afraid that it would take to do an immersion school. So my point is, it doesn't matter to me as one of the founders, or to any of the founders, I think, what kind of arrangement we've got in order to offer the program. We started the school because we wanted to offer the innovative program. We've got IB, we've got language immersion. Those are the things we really wanted to do, and it happened that we could do them as a charter school. At this time, I think the program could be stronger if we can connect with the 7-12 grades and offer it as part of this pilot project.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. Are there questions? Thank you very much. Are there those in the audience who have concerns?
Madam Chair,
welcome, Mr. Hansen.
Yep, thank you again.
Please state your name again.
Yep, David Hansen from the National Association of Charter School Authorizers. You know, as long as I'm here, and Representative Detmer, I apologize, we're kind of dropping in on this out of the blue from a national organization, but we've been talking at length about your statutes 124D, and what I hear happening is basically that the local school district would be operating as an authorizer, and we think it would be very important for them to go through the authorizer approval process. You're opening up a pretty significant loophole. At the same time, there are many local school districts, independent school districts across the country, who are tremendous authorizers. Some of them are very large. Typically, it tends to be Houston, for example. Chicago is an excellent authorizer of charter schools. there's something here in the spirit of Minnesota and your ability to come up with solutions to interesting situations to make it possible for school districts like this to be a good authorizer as well. But we would really say that you would be encouraging a significant loophole if you were to allow the local district to, in effect, become an authorizer without going through the approval regime about the bill we just talked about. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So, Mr. Hansen, are you looking at keeping the separation charter versus regular public in place, and that then would accommodate Forest Lake becoming an authorizer?
Madam Chair, yeah. We see, for example, in Wisconsin, where the lines between the LEA, the local education agency, the school district, and the charters that they operate there are blurred. And they don't really operate with the same vigor and innovation, that, and it's a missed potential for that state. You have that here in Minnesota. You've got great energies here, but we think that you just need to make sure you get the structure in place so that this continues to happen by the standards you expect of all authorizers. Because what we do see in for example, Ohio, where LEAs are authorizers, and sometimes in Michigan, for example, you see a race to the bottom, unfortunately, where schools get paired up with LEAs who are merely looking for the fees and not necessarily looking for the quality. And so you've got the right authorizer regime and approval regime in place. I would encourage you to make sure that everybody goes through that.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Are there any questions for him?
Thank you.
Are there others with concerns? Please come forward. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee, I'm Louise Sundin. I'm representing Minneapolis Federation of Teachers tonight, and you heard our name mentioned already a couple of times tonight, so we aren't without some qualifications or at least chutzpah in this area. But I also just want to make a slight correction about something that was just said in this discussion, and that is that there will be a French immersion self-governed schools that will be open the fall of 2011 on the north side of Minneapolis. So that bill that we helped design and Mr. Bartholomew helped write and advance, we think has all of the freedom to incorporate and encompass what Forest Lake would like to do here. Unless, of course, two things. Unless they put it in the hands of attorneys to decide whether it would qualify or not, if their real goal was to circumvent the teachers as part of the decision making. So I would just say that we do have one in the works that is a language immersion, and we do think that the self-governed schools language or site-governed schools language would indeed encompass such a good activity, and we support the idea.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Peterson, just a minute, Ms. Sunding.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Sundin, which idea did you support?
Ms. Sundin.
I'm sorry, that was a little fuzzy. I just realized when I turned around. Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, support the idea of incorporating Lila or Lila idea as a self-governed school and not having the necessity of changing law in order to make it special.
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair and Ms. Sundin, do the self-governed schools get lease aid?
Ms. Sundin.
Madam Chair, I have no idea.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, did Representative Peterson just call me back here to embarrass me?
Are there others in the audience who would like to speak of concerns? Welcome to the committee. Mr. Piccolo, say your name for the record.
Eugene Piccolo, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools, and Chair and members. First, the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools would like to commend the cooperative program that Blake's International Language Academy and Forest Lake District School have implemented to align and articulate their Spanish immersion programs. They've been recognized nationally for that effort this past year. Second, we as an association support cooperative action and programming between charter schools and school districts, but we would take a different approach to it. We would support a change in the law to allow joint powers agreements between charter schools and school districts, which are not now allowed under Minnesota statute, because of the fact that charter schools are nonprofit organizations and joint power agreements must be between government agencies, according to an interpretation that came down, I don't know if you remember, it was a court decision or the Attorney General a couple of years ago. So we would support the idea of a joint powers agreement change in the law to allow greater cooperation between schools. We do have significant concerns about this particular legislation in the form, its current form and nature. First, it undermines the whole concept of charter schools, that they are autonomous organizations. You cannot have a charter school that has no children, no teachers, no funding, and still be a charter school. That's a contradiction in terms, in definition. Second, it undermines, we have concerns about it undermining the role and responsibility of authorizers, as was already stated. Third, we do have concerns that if a charter school has no students, how can it collect lease aid, which is based on a charter school having students? So while, again, we support the idea of cooperation and stuff, we believe there are other ways of doing this. One would be a joint powers agreement, change in the law, or to establish in law a process for charter schools which wish to convert to a traditional district, be part of a traditional district, to be able to do that. We do have in law a provision in the charter school law that a traditional school can convert to a charter school. So it may be appropriate to have a subsequent reverse process in the law to allow charter schools to go the other way.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. I have any questions. Representative Moran.
I don't have a question, but a statement.
Go ahead. Make your statement.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am sitting here just trying to take this all in, but feel real uneasy because we just debated Wooders' bill around authorizers and saying the importance of having authorizers in place. And then we have someone come before us who is not an authorizer who is asking to take on a charter school. And I am really, I mean, it's really great to see that they have a special relationship and it's a bond there, you know, and the willingness to have the support from the school district. I mean, all that is fantastic. But it put us in a place where we are creating laws and saying one thing, and then we want to give someone an exception to that law. And I just feel uneasy about that. And they're asking for an amendment that allows the district to count the charter school, as you said, as students and the charter employees as district employees, but the building stays as a chartered facility and conditions of the school continues to receive lease aids. And so it just seems inappropriate to do what you're asking us to do without the school becoming the authorizer. And it's kind of like double dipping too. So we as legislators, as lawmakers, it is our job to uphold what we are asking from all charter schools. And so that's just my statement.
Thank you, Representative Moran. Are there others in the audience who have concerns? And if there are others who want to speak in support of it, I won't forget you either, because sometimes you decide you want to come forward. Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Katie Peel. I am the Director of Charter School Authorizing for Volunteers of America and the Charter Schools. I'm Lila's Charter School Authorizer. And we have been working with the members of the school board and of the directors of the of this school, as well as individuals from the Forest Lake School District, and I have enjoyed the conversations that have gone back and forth. There has been a real meaningful conversation here about what this could look like, and I believe and agree with the concept, the idea of what is being asked here to do, which is to help. What charter schools are about is bringing ideas and innovation to traditional district schools as well. And so I fundamentally agree with that concept. And as it's laying out here, we have gone through a number of iterations with the draft of the language. And the piece that I'm still uncomfortable with, that I think that others have iterated here, that is the element on the top of page 2.1 and 2.2, which discusses that that Leela and the Forest Lake mutually agree to provisions of 124D10. So what's while this school is no longer a charter school, it's not real clear what's laying out here, what exact elements the school would be required to follow, and that is actually being held, left to the responsibility of the district and the school to determine that. And that's a piece that I think still needs to get worked out. That being said, I do fully, I believe that the concept and the idea of sharing best practices amongst all education institutions, whether charter, public, or even private, for the better education of our students and the success and innovative ideas for education is ideal, and I think that is what is, I want to make sure that we keep that at the back of our heads here, because that is what is the efforts here tonight.
Is your last name spelled P-I-E-L?
P-I-E-H-L.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Peel? Thank you very much. Are there others in the audience who would like to speak about the concerns they have for this house plan? Welcome to the committee, Mr. Nathan. Say your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I've appeared in many times before the legislature in the last quarter century, and it's almost always been to encourage people to try something new. But my conscience cannot allow me to support this. In fact, I think this is a seriously flawed idea at this point. It could be improved. I want to echo Representative Moran's excellent points. I won't repeat them, but they're very well taken. Does the legislature want to say to all the charters in the state of Minnesota, you must have an approved authorizer, except Forest Lake? Does the legislature want to say to all their authorizers in the state, you must go through an extremely rigorous examination, you must spend hundreds of hours developing very clear, specific, thoughtful, and rigorous questions, responses to very important questions, except not Forest Lake? I don't think you want to do that. I don't think you want to say to all the other authorizers in the state who have gone through very rigorous questions, you have to do it, but Forest Lake doesn't. I don't think you want to say to all of the schools in Minnesota that are chartered, you have to find an authorizer that's been approved, except if you're Forest Lake. That strikes me as the kind of message that I don't think that the legislature, if it's concerned, and I know in talking and working with many of you over many years, I don't think that's the kind of message that you want to send. I want to raise four specific concerns. One, without taking too much of your time, I want to point out to you the lines 2.3, 2.4, and 2.5 on page 2. Incidentally, I was asked to testify about this by the school yesterday afternoon at 2:30. I had not been given a copy of it, but I was asked to testify in favor, and I said, what bill? So the more I found out about it, the more concerned I became, as some of you know from emails last night. The monitoring committee, composed of representatives of the school, Forest Lake, and volunteers, and any other individuals agreed to by these entities, that meets at least annually to assess the progress and status. Now, the comment has been made earlier that sometimes authorizers do not close down a school. What happens if the school board and the authorizer disagree? Or it's not really clear what role the Volunteers of America is going to play. So let's just say the entity of Volunteers of America. What happens if the school board and Volunteers of America disagree? And let's be clear, folks, there is a very powerful economic incentive for Forest Lake Public Schools to want to do this. The words double dipping have been used. Some of you remember that some years ago, the legislature in its wisdom decided to do lease aid because, in part, charter public schools were not allowed access to local property taxes. I just asked and have been told that there is a local property referendum, an operating referendum. So here we have a school, one school, by the way, that's going to be allowed to get lease aid and to get local property taxes. Is that a message that you want to send to all the other charter schools? You either have lease aid or you have access to local property taxes, except if you're in Forest Lake. So that's a concern. The concern, I think, is critical in terms of accountability about this monitoring committee. Either the school board is in charge of this or an authorizer is in charge of this. If you have two different groups, if they disagree, you've got trouble. And all over the state, we have had examples of chartered public schools that have run into problems. I'm not saying this one will, but I'm saying the interests of the taxpayer are that there be clear lines of authority and accountability, and I think that this fails the test. You've heard this evening that they're not going to be a charter, but then you've heard they do want to keep the charter. You've heard this evening that they don't want to be a charter, but on lines 2.13, the bill says the charter employees are at-will employees. Well, either they're charter or they're not. I don't think that this bill is ready and should be approved in its current status. Two last points. The idea of collaboration between district and charter that the superintendent talked about is magnificent. In this city, we have examples of district and charter public schools cooperating. In the Le Sueur Henderson area, we have examples of district and charter public schools cooperating. In Minneapolis, we have examples of district and charter public schools cooperating, but they're not double dipping, and the lines of authority and the lines of accountability are very clear. Finally, going back to the points that have been raised by Representative Peterson about site-governed schools, it is possible to modify the site-governed school provisions, self-governed schools provisions, such that this entity could convert, as Mr. Piccolo said, from a chartered public school to a site-governed school. And I won't reiterate his points, but that could be modified, and it seems to me that that really ought to be considered. It seems to me that there are some very important ideas in here about collaboration, and that's good for youngsters, and that's good for taxpayers. But right now, the lines of authority and accountability are deeply flawed and unclear, and we are providing very special and, I believe, unfair opportunities for one school and one quasi, but I won't call it an authorizer because it's not an authorizer. It hasn't been approved. I talked with Mr. Hartman of the Department of Education to confirm what I saw on the State Department of Education's website. It's not an approved authorizer. So I think that this does deserve more attention and deserve more work, and it might be at some future point that this should be approved. But at this point, it seems to me that there are very serious concerns that the legislature should raise, and at this point should not approve this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there questions for Mr. Nathan? Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Are there others in the audience who would like to express concerns? Mr. Hedlund, before you comment, does the department want to make a statement at all? I know that you did work, or at least the commissioner met with Representative Detmer. Thank you, Brian. Please come and say your name for the record. And
Brian Shackleton, government relations for Department of Education. You know, the commissioner was really impressed by kind of the innovative spirit and the collaborative work that went into this between Forest Lake and Lila or Leela, but there are some issues of ambiguity and of accountability in this bill and that need to be worked out, and so we do have those concerns. Most of those have been raised by previous presenters, and so I don't feel like we need to go through them. If you'd like to, David Hartman is here, and we can answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Shackleton. Are there any questions for Mr. Shackleton? Are there others in the audience who did not get to speak in support of this proposal? Yes, please come forward. Say your name for the record and give your testimony. We want everyone to be heard tonight. As I said, this is an experiment, and we need to vet this.
My name is Chad Bloomberg. I am the board chair of the Lila Elementary School, Charter School. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. First, I want to let you know that my children are the most important thing to me, and that is why I'm here today as a parent and as a board member. What we have been endured throughout the charter movement, which probably started while I was either in high school or college, I'm not sure, is an important piece in our education system. As I've come to find with what charters are all about as a parent, it's an extremely impressive, innovative learning system. I hear innovation, I hear children, I hear teachers. It's a whole different idea. Forest Lake, I've lived there for 15 years, and I can really tell you that I've learned a lot about not only what Forest Lake has to offer, but what our school has to offer and what the people are all about. What we're asking you here tonight to do is embrace this experiment. We have been challenged as a charter school not only from our holdbacks, but from an authorizer. We were one of the state of Minnesota, the MDE authorizers, and then the new law came across, and we too were in search of an authorizer, and that was a very difficult time for our school. As you heard this evening, you've heard parents and teachers come forward and say, we don't know what to tell our kids. We too were faced with that same piece. We overcame that. Why? Because we were innovative and we went after and sought after the VOA or other authorizers that were available. We're very happy to be in association with the VOA. We've learned a lot from them, and hopefully they've learned a lot about us. Just touching in terms of some of the other challenges, I talked about the holdbacks. We've been fiscally responsible with the holdback piece. There's a lot of charter schools out there that have had a lot of concern around where do we get the money. And that is often seen with our communications that we receive from the MAX piece or even in the newspapers. We manage a $4.3 million budget, and we do a very good job at it. We're fiscally responsible. We make sure our kids do well. We are here this evening simply to tell you that we would like you guys to be responsible with us and really allow us to move ahead with this. It's a pilot. It's 5 years. Let us come back in 3 years, give you an update. Let us come back in 5 years, and let's talk about it. That is where we're at with this, and I hope that in this evening, as you go to vote, that you will be in support of this.
Thank you, Mr. Lindberg. Are there questions? Representative Griley, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question. I was going to make a statement, but I can wait until you're done with testifiers.
Thank you. Are there others who would like to come forward in support or with concerns? Ms. Alzweiger. Welcome to the committee again.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alzweiger, Education Minnesota. But we think that the site-governed schools would be a model that maybe we should look at. And I won't, there's been a tremendous amount of testimony already. I'd like to just turn it over to one of our attorneys, Meg Luger from Education Minnesota.
Welcome to our committee. Say your name for the record.
My name is Meg Luger-Nicolai, and thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair, to testify. I want to say at the outset that we have nothing but support for opportunities for immersion programming for students. I'm an alumna of the Forest Lake School District. Thank you, Mr. Bettner, for trying to help me in gym class. but what I do want to talk about is some concerns that we have about the language, concerns that Representative Peterson has referred to, Madam Chair, and additionally Ms. Peel raised, but I want to identify them more specifically just so we kind of understand what the mechanics are that concern us. And I'd like to direct the committee's attention to, once again, lines 2.1 and 2.2. The concern that we have and the concern that Education Minnesota has is that this, without further clarification, suspends the operation of all of the charter law except for one provision, and that provision is the one that suspends the application of the rest of the education code to the school. And so I think without a little bit more clarification and a little bit more meat on the bones of this bill, we'd have some serious concerns about really what would be the operating guidelines for the school if this were to come into effect. You know, from my perspective, certainly as an attorney at Education Minnesota, the concerns that I have are largely for the employment status of the folks in the district. Just to add a little bit of context also to Representative Detmer's excellent explication of the district dynamics, there is a partial immersion program in the Forest Lake School District, which my niece attends. And the concerns that I see are that we've got a group of teachers who are providing very, very similar instruction to other teachers, and they live in very different worlds from the standpoint of employment law. And I think that would be potentially ameliorated by removing the reference to at-will employment, but I don't think it would be wholly ameliorated. And so I think more clarification of that would be absolutely necessary.
Thank you. Members, are there questions? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak in support or with concerns? Closing comments, Representative Detmer.
Well, that's quite a reunion we had here tonight.
I can tell you were highly respected, Representative Detmer.
Very proud of everyone that came in and spoke tonight, and also given me a chance to bring this forward for both schools, for Leela and for Forest Lake School District. And as the testimony pointed out, a lot went into Leela getting themselves organized and over the years, and the struggles that they've had, and just the strong people they have in leadership there, and also the high school got the right people in the right place. And I think there's some good things that can come out of this. And again, I want to remind everybody in the committee that this is a pilot program. We want to give these two schools a chance to make something like this work, and then after a year or two or three, come back and talk about what's been going on. And then at the end of 5 years, at that time, as they pointed out in their testimony, a decision has to be made. In terms of maybe the Forest Lake School District become an authorizer, I mean, maybe that's something in the future. I can't speak for those two schools. I can only speak on behalf of being their representative here and bringing them to the table to let everybody listen and ask the great questions. And I think everybody's got to have a good night's sleep tonight, too.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Greiling, you have a closing word.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I want to say I stayed here and listened, even though Representative Detmer was not my gym teacher. I'm sure he was a wonderful one. And there's a party I would have liked to have been, but I wanted to stay here and get a chance to hear his bill. He was a respected member of this committee, and we miss you a lot. And like you a lot, even more so than we like your bill here with the current configuration. It seems to me, though, that everybody likes the idea, not the bill in its current configuration, but we like the idea, and everybody likes the immersion schools. And so you've heard the two ideas, have Forest Lake School become an authorizer, or have a self-governed school. And I think either one solves the problem. So I hope you will take, one or the, discuss which one people want to do and go forward with this, because I think it has a lot of potential, but just not in the current form.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, I respect your comments very much. And that's not going to be up to me to make those decisions. The two schools sitting behind me, I'm sure they're going to meet and decide where they want to go from now, from here. And when they do come back to me, I will bring them back. And that's my job as a representative. So,
thank you, Representative Detmer. And members, I'm going to table this bill. We are not ready for any action on it. Even laying it over for possible inclusion would be not ethical on my part. Representative Murdoch, have you looked over the minutes, and would you approve those, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, I looked at it.
Representative Murdoch moves approval of the minutes of March 15th. Thank you, Representative Murdoch, for having read them thoroughly.
Read them thoroughly. It's been so long since
Ms. Hackenmuller does do a great job of having me proofread those. And members, there were some glasses found in the ladies' room if you are missing your eyeglasses. With that, members, we will meet again at 9 o'clock in the morning. This meeting is adjourned in this room.